Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
And Gus, you had said before during that program we did about the numbers and how they mentioned 88% of the American people were in favor of the purge. And I think you said that when you look at the census, black people are about 12 or 13%. So who is that 88%? And something else, too, that was mentioned to me by someone, and that was, I think Hushai Prince mentioned that when you look at the purge, the chairman's address, I mean, look at the website, the chairman's address is dated to 2022. It says that 6 years ago when the purge started, that would be 2016, the last year of the Obama administration. How that plays in, what the thinking is on that, I don't know. But I just thought it was interesting that they used those particular numbers and those particular dates.
Boy, there's a whole bunch of Negroes coming right this way. And we sitting up here like a bucket of motherfucking chicken.
Megan Olson, who goes by the name Megatron on Twitter, wrote, "If we had a real-life purge, I would kill as many Mexicans as I could in one night. Hashtag, learn how to tip, you blanking blank."
Yeah, I was offended by it.
Olson's next-door neighbor says he, too, has worked in the restaurant industry, so he knows what it's like not to get a tip. But
if you're going to go on social media that brightly and say what she said, you need to be removed from that public position.
Other people felt the same way, filling Texas Roadhouse's Facebook page with messages like this one. "A violent and racist employee is very bad for business. Please send her packing." Management did.
"Our managing partner of our Greeley location actually was mowing his lawn when he was alerted. He immediately rushed to the restaurant, met with this employee that posted this disgusting tweet, and she was terminated."
I think that Texas Roadhouse did the responsible thing in letting her go.
Cristobal Garcia notes that Olson apologized on Facebook for her comments. He calls the incident a learning experience.
"It's important for you to be able to say, I'm going to work with people, I'm going to connect with people, and not all of them are like me. And how am I going to make a difference? And how am I going to make sure that I'm connecting with these folks, whether they are like me or not?"
Generation Latino says it's no surprise that we're seeing comments like this in this political climate. The executive director says the vitriol and hate is real and adds that Latinos shouldn't have to face verbal and physical abuse in their own country that they love too.
Hordes of young adults are arriving from Spain, Denmark, South Africa. They're being called murder tourists as they are here for one reason, to purge.
"We're here to experience the purge, to kill, release all the anger and hate, be like Americans. We're very excited. It's going to be nice to be Afrikaners to do. Now it's come for you.
Foreigners coming to our capital to kill. Murder tourism is the new booming business in our country this year."
Indianapolis teen Jonathan Cruz is accused of killing 3 people in 4 days in a twisted crime spree that was inspired by the horror movie The Purge. The attacks appeared to be totally random. Cruz gunned down Billy Boyd and Jay Higginbottom on May 12th and murdered Jose Ruiz 3 days later. He is also accused of robbing a man at gunpoint on May 14th. In the purge, murder and all crimes are legal for 12 hours in an annual rite of violence. Cruz has been jailed since his May 16th arrest on felony charges from a confrontation with a teenage girl at Wendy's 2 days earlier. He had threatened the girl with a gun and kept her from leaving. Prosecutors say they will consider the death penalty.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Wednesday, July 27th, 2016. So I have been told. I made the audio clip that we played at the beginning of the program today, and after I made it and picked all the individual clips that needed to be placed in, I had a difficult time picking out what the real thing was and what was from the film. So just to make sure that folks are clear, and I deliberately left it that way without trying to do anything to break it up so you could be clear, just to show this is reflective of where we are, system of racism, white supremacy, 2016. So the first portion, you heard our guest for today's program. She'll be hanging out, giving her views on this film and many other things that are happening. But that was from 2013, where she was talking about the first installment with the Purge franchise back in 2013. Next installment, where they said, we are sitting here, the metaphors, what I say all the time, metaphors, where they say, there are a whole lot of Negroes coming, and we are sitting here like a MFing bucket of chicken. That was from the latest Purge that just came out weeks ago, this month, July 4th weekend, no less. The next clip, number three, happened just days ago. Megan Olson, suspected white supremacist, where she tweeted that she would like to purge and kill as many Mexicans as possible because they're bad tippers. And allegedly she was fired. Again, racists, whites, they don't get fired. They get transferred. The next sequence, back to the film, the latest Purge, where you heard a white person from South Africa, no less. I thought that that was very important, where he's saying that we're traveling. We're coming from all over the world to the U.S. for the opportunity to kill, and boasting about it proudly. They said this is our latest tourism industry where you get to come and kill. That's from the latest Purge. Reminded me of Katrina, where you had hordes of whites coming from all over to look at the misery and devastation of black people in Louisiana. Last clip, and I'm stunned that a lot of people didn't hear about this because this is like recent. This happened just literally weeks ago. Jonathan Cruz, 19-year-old white terrorist, younger than Dylan Storm Roof, said he was inspired by the Purge, went out, killed three people. One of them, a black male, I think he killed another non-white male, and then, at least from the visual that I saw, it does look like he did kill one individual who would be classified as white, but that notwithstanding, most of the people he killed were non-white, and specifically the Washington Post, they had a report, this was from June. Like I said, this is not ancient, this is very, very recent. This is from June 2nd of this year. The Purge horror film allegedly inspires deadly rampage by Indiana teen. I'm not reading the whole thing, just this one paragraph. Searches of Jonathan Cruz's cell phone, the affidavit says, revealed an obsession with violence and guns. Witnesses, including one who said was his girlfriend, described a callous individual hell-bent on taking lives, particularly those of black people, without regard or consequences. Just from this year, in fact, this is so current, it was just reported this week, literally, within the last like 24 hours, Mr. Cruz is going to be facing the death penalty for these three murders, all surrounding the Purge film. This program is not about the Purge. This is just, you know, kind of our entrance way to all of the things that we are going to talk about. Again, I think this franchise is very reflective of where we are and what you're seeing all areas of people activity with regards to black people worldwide, system of racism, white supremacy. Our guest on today's program, she has written about this franchise at her blog, racismws.com, racismws.com. You can find reports on the Purge and many other aspects of the system of racism, white supremacy, timely information. I think a lot of folks have found it very constructive. Appreciate her writing efforts there, as well as her co-authoring multiple books, all dealing with things black people can and should do to help solve the problem of racism, white supremacy immediately. We've discussed them many times on the program. Trojan Horse, Death of a Dark Nation, Black Love is a Revolutionary Act, The Interracial Con Game, and The Beauty Con Game. They are all available at Amazon.com. Please write a review if you have read the book. I would say even if you have heard her on the program, because many people have heard her many, many times and always look forward to hearing her views. If you have read the book and or heard her discuss the book, write a review. It is very helpful. Should not take you. This is not an all-day task. This can probably be done in 30 minutes where you can write six sentences about the book, what you read, and why you think it would be constructive if other black people, non-white people, victims of racism, if they got this material and shared it widely. They are available at Amazon, and you'll also see the books promoted at racismws.com. Always a treat to have her on the program. Again, one of our favorite guests here at The Cows, joining us live, founder of Trojan Horse Publications. Pam, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Gus.
Evening, Pam. Glad you could share a bit of your Wednesday evening with us. We will step aside and allow you to give some of your views on what's been going down. Just for our listeners, we might have folks, this might be their first time hearing from you. Anything that you would like to share, anything you think people should know about who you are?
Well, I've been trying to, you know, the self-study of racism, white supremacy since 2008, maybe 2009, probably 2008. During the first Obama election, and I partook of the great information from Mr. Neely Fuller, Dr. Welzing. I've learned a lot from you guys, from Kyle's, from the viewers, I mean not the viewers, the listeners and your guest. So I would say probably I feel fairly confident that I have some understanding of the system of white supremacy in the books that I've written. I try to impart what I've learned, and at the very least, give food for thought. So I would say, you know, that I'm still struggling with my own issues under the system of white supremacy. But the one thing I'm so grateful for is that I had to unlearn so much stuff that I had previously believed. And I would say to anyone, if you still believe the same thing that you believed 10 years ago, then you haven't learned enough. The whole process of learning is unlearning. It's just like taking off old paint to put new paint on. So, and I came to this thought because recently I had an interaction on online with some relatives of mine, some very white identified relatives. And, you know, when I read their comments to me, it's the same mantra. It's like the same thing that they said 10 years ago. And so it crossed my mind that they're stuck. Not just because they disagree with me, but because it's the same. So I guess that's what I would share with someone who has not, you know, listened to me before, is that, you know, the whole process of racism, white supremacy involves not just learning new material or new information, it's unlearning old material. You really do have to scrape off some of the old paint to get the new paint to stick, and it's a lifelong journey. And I did want to comment about leaving the reviews. You don't even have to spend more than 5 minutes. You could look at the reviews and just take a line from somebody else's review. Or you could just say, really, you know, check the book out, recommend this book. You don't even have to give an essay or anything. You know, you can spend 5 minutes, and whether you read the book or not, you know, it would be very helpful because it does encourage other people to read. You know, and I know it does encourage me when I look at a review of a movie or a book. It does a lot. It really does greatly influence me on whether or not I want to look at that movie or read that book. So that's all I would start off saying.
Hear, hear. RacismWS.com. Visit the website. Write a review. Easy counter-racist task. I know a lot of folks encourage consistently, don't be spectators. We need more active participants. That's something that you can do. Very, very easy. Write a review. And you could do that for any black authors that you think have constructive information that would be helpful. Write a review. If you have a website or what have you, write a book review. I'm sure they would be super appreciative. Moving forward. Before I hit the purge, I encourage folks to check the news as frequently as you can. It's important to just get a better understanding of the world in which we live and just things that are happening locally, nationally, globally. Dr. Welsing encouraged that all the time as well. I'm looking at the Washington Post, which I read daily. So the most read stories, that's where I got the report about Jonathan Cruz, white terrorist facing the death penalty in Indiana. So the second most read story, police say he was resisting arrest. He says he was getting burned by 165 degree pavement. I think this is a non-white male, another incident of police terrorism gone wild. So that's the second most read story. The fifth most read story, Texas man filmed beating turtle to death with hammer says it was self-defense. I don't have anything against turtles, reptiles, starfish, dogs, cats, any animals. I'm cool in the game with them. No cat, no turtle has ever called me nigger, homage Muhammad Ali. However, this to me almost seems like just racist folly because I can see whites the same way that they went wild about Harambe, the gorilla that was shot in Pennsylvania not that long ago, and Cecil the lion from last year where they went wild and were raising money and, you know, just, oh my God, I can't believe he went over there. Killed him. Now I can see them going wild about this turtle. Black people are being bludgeoned, choked, tased, shot every day. And it's, well, you know, you unruly niggers, you know, if you would just pay attention and do right and pull your pants up and not feed your children fried chicken, everything would be fine and we wouldn't have these problems. The turtle, oh my God, they have killed it. Like, just that alone is enough to drive you insane under the system of white supremacy. But to me, this just looks like total racist folly. Did you have any comments you wanted to interject, Pam, or we move into the purge?
You know, I have the same sentiment. I love animals. I don't like to see animals harmed and mistreated. However, I don't think it's okay to harm people and make a big fuss about animals. And I noticed that that is apparently the case with the white collective. For example, in New Orleans, I make this comparison all the time. Had it been dogs and, say it had been kittens and puppies, stranded on the roof during the Hurricane Katrina, might America would have moved heaven and earth to get those kittens and puppies off of that roof. And they would have been in an uproar, storming down to Louisiana, storming across the Capitol about the idea of, say, 100 puppies left to die on the roof. But black people were dying on the roof and drowning in their attics, laying on the street, flooded streets of New Orleans, bloated bodies. The only time it meant something to the white collective is when the world started hearing about it and they started getting all that negative attention. And then all of a sudden, these so-called attempts to offer assistance and aid from random white people started flooding in. I believe it was because the world, they were on the world stage. See, a sociopathic group person, individual, doesn't care about the crime they commit. They only care about being exposed because that exposure can cause them problems. So I just have always, when I see this comparison between the grief over an animal and the grief and the lack of grief over a human being, a black human being, I always think of New Orleans. And there's no way animals would have suffered in Hurricane Katrina. First of all, they would have tried to get them out. So there's no way that they would have let animals suffer like that. And I think that should have been a wake-up call. I think Dr. Welsing even referred to it in those terms. Katrina should have been a wake-up call. Katrina should have been a wake-up call for black people in America. It should have been a wake-up call to our true status because they didn't even call us citizens or evacuees, which is another word for citizen. They called us refugees. There's been a lot. And unfortunately, Katrina is in the rearview mirror. I mean, it's largely forgotten about. And I do think that black people collectively in this country are in a state of denial and numbed down. Numbed down. And it's understandable because a human being can only take so much before the human being begins to feel hopeless. And they even have syndromes, psychiatric syndromes, named after this phenomena where people get, you know, animals, people, during experiments get so beaten down they give up. But I would say to everyone, you really can't afford to give up. Maybe you don't get actively involved, but you better keep your mind active. And that doesn't mean you drown in this driving anything, but you better stop. You got to get out of denial, because the only people that are going to save us is us. I'm sorry, the church ain't going to save you. The pastor ain't going to save you. Obama's not going to save you. And neither is your white savior going to save you. We have to save ourselves. I think we have to really wrap our heads around this, that if anything's going to change, it's going to be us that has to change. Not white people, not somebody else. We're going to have to change.
Context of white supremacy. They have whole books, incidentally, where whites went down and rescued dogs, cats, various critters during the debacle, Hurricane Katrina. Moving forward, speaking of Katrina, I think one of the elements that did get greatly underplayed was the white terrorism, where whites actively went out to shoot and kill black people, not to rescue or to save or see if they had clean water, but to actively shoot unarmed black people. This was documented. We talked about it. A.C. Thompson, his fantastic reporting, which was in The Nation. He was on Democracy Now. He was a guest on our program in 2009, but extremely important. This is in Gary Rivlin's book, Katrina After the Flood, where he talks about, again, white terrorists going out and killing black people. This got very little attention during the debacle, and since it's almost forgotten about, I think a lot of people, that it would be news to them if you brought this up. Just making that, when we talk about films like The Purge, where white people glorify and make entertainment out of going to kill black people, they do this. Not past tense, not something that they did 100 years ago, 200 years ago, or what have you, but they do this like now, current, present, 2016. Not spending a whole lot of time on The Purge, because we are going to talk about this next week with Dr. Martin Kevorkian, all three of the films in the franchise, and individual film breakdown and greater ramifications in terms of what this means, what is this revealing about the system of racism, white supremacy. But you did write about this film coming out back in 2013. Two other films have come out since then. Economically, these films have been enormous. They have grossed approximately $300 million worldwide since 2013. That means they're averaging about $100 million per film. That is gargantuan success in Hollywood terms. And this third one is still rolling. It just came out weeks ago. What is the? And I'll even pause because I have seen the third one. The climax of the third one, whites are killing people, purging, if you will, in a church. This is one year from Charleston, and they're killing in a church. They even say this is a part of our religion, going out and killing. They say that at the very beginning of the third one. But what is the significance with this film franchise coming out? I already read some of the reports how this has inspired little white terrorists to go out and do what they do and brag about the opportunity to kill non-white people and or to just go ahead and commit acts of murder against non-white people, particularly black people. What is the significance of the release of this film at this time? In the third film, it is importantly titled The Purge Election Year. This film was released July 4th weekend, 2016. This film was released literally days before the murder of Alton Sterling in Minnesota, in Louisiana, Alton Sterling, days before the murder shooting death of Philando Castile in Minnesota, and the shooting in Dallas, Texas, where the alleged gunman, black male Micah Xavier Johnson, the Purge, days before all of that took place this month. The significance of the release of this film at this point, and what is this film franchise revealing about the system of white supremacy?
I think it's revealing, to some degree, some desperation. I mean, this system is struggling to maintain itself, particularly economically. Here we are on the verge of an election. That may or may not take place. And what I mean by that is there's a lot of things coming into play towards the end of the year. The possibility of war, the possibility of economic collapse. And what I believe is rather than have the people focused on what's going on. They play the same trick that they always play, and that is to divert the white population's attention to a different enemy, away from the economic problems, away from the economic pain, away from an election that appears to be a circus, and make it all appear to be about the problems of people of color. I actually looked at a little bit of a movie called the Secret Life of Pets. I was just curious. I generally don't watch animated films, but I was just curious. And so I watched about 10 minutes of it. Oh, my God. It was rampant with white supremacy. And what I mean by that is they had, the cute little, first of all, they had an androgynous-looking female, I guess the main character, the main dog character. His owner was a female who didn't look like a female. She was tall and skinny with no breasts and short hair. And, I noticed they pushed that a lot, this idea that a sexy, desirable woman is somebody who looks like a boy. They've been pushing that concept a lot. But, okay, all that aside, the dog was, the voiceover was a white male, somebody maybe in their 20s. And the dog was cute with floppy ears, and it was brown and white. And so this white female owner brings home this big, shaggy, brown dog and says, well, this dog is homeless, and we just want to, doesn't have a home, and I just brought you home a brother or something like that. And so the big dog, brown and hairy, about three times the size of the white dog, he comes lumbering into the house. He's upset, like he leaves him with the dog. The dog pushes the other dog around, wants to share the little doggy bed with him, which he's too big for it, literally sits on the dog, pushes the dog out of that. And I'm looking at it, and I said, wow, is this not the image that they're painting of immigrants coming into Europe, where these brown men coming in and just push, brought in sometime by the white people, whatever. Coming in and just messing everything up and just stomping all over the rights of the other dogs, stomping on the rights of the white people. And I just said, wow, if you watch this, you can see that, of course, this is typical of most children's. And I wish parents would really pay attention. Don't let the television babysit your children. Look and see what they're looking at. Most of these kids' cartoons are rife with white supremacy. The nicer, smarter creatures, people, whatever, are usually light or white, and the ones that are mean and scary are dark. And so I didn't watch very much of it, and I was done with it because I'm like, I was curious. I just thought it might have been lightly entertaining. The Secret Life of Pets was just full of white supremacy. But the message to me was non-white people are a problem. They are a problem. They are stomping on our rights. They're making a mess. They're a pain in the butt, they're a problem. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of racial antagonism. I've seen it, racial antagonism. And films like The Purge just add a whole other dimension. Because while all this is going on, the population is becoming more unstable. The population is under a lot of pressure, financial pressure, fears for their future, fears for the future of their children, all kinds of corruption going on, all kinds of things going on. People are afraid. They're upset. They're anxious. So they're feeding into that and feeding that racist message into that. All of this is by design. It's none of it's accidental. And that's the thing people have to keep in mind. Everything you look at has a purpose. There's nothing wasted in media. Nothing. Not a song, not a movie, not a TV show. Not an advertisement. None of it is wasted. They use every opportunity they can to promote that message of white supremacy, black inferiority, non-white inferiority, harm to non-white people. They feed that message in everything that they do.
Context of white supremacy. I concur. Again, we will have more to say about the Purge franchise down the road next week. Folks want to be prepared to deal with that, specifically with all of the shootings that have taken place, and there have probably been some more that have happened since we went live that have happened this month, and how all of that has been discussed nationally, where you've had so many different figures weigh in. This has become a part of the dialogue in the presidential election in terms of what are your observations on what's been happening with these events, and particularly the police shootings down in Dallas, Baton Rouge. Observations on what you've seen over this past month, and I guess some suggestions in terms of what you would recommend black people do in response to what has unfolded.
Well, what I have noticed is, again, you know, deliberate racial antagonism. I don't buy the story of the Dallas police shooting. From what I understand, and I can't verify this, but from what I understand, there was a mock police drill that happened days before the shooting. You know, it's a little suspicious. You know, first they thought it was three or four snipers, then they figured out it was one. And I just don't believe it necessarily went down the way they said. They've had a lot of false flags around quote-unquote shooting, mass shootings. And the one thing that's suspicious to me about police shootings is that the timing of it. First you have two black men murdered right on video, murdered. Undeniable that what happened to them was totally unjustified. Then, within less than a week, instead of the police starting to look like villains, all of a sudden the whole thing scenario gets swapped, and now the police are the victims, and blacks are the villains. So to me, the timing and the fact that these two guys were ex-military, which God knows what that means, you know, since neither one of them talked, you know, I always find that a little suspicious that the people get killed before they get a chance to talk. But in any case, I just think it smells. There's something, an element of it that smells. And I'm not saying when no one got killed, I'm just not buying the story that both of these incidents happened and now you flip the whole scenario around where black people are the villains and white people are the victims. You know, so I'm not buying it. But in Chicago, for example, there's a lot of random shootings. And you mentioned these people coming from Australia, you know, to have a little fun, you know, killing people. I've been saying this for years. I truly believe that that more than half of the killings in Chicago, maybe about half, maybe gang-related or, you know, whatever kind of stuff happens between people in the course of just living. But I believe about half of them, at least, are not gang-related, that they're not domestic violence, they're not this. I believe that there are forces within the Chicago, whether it's the police force, whether it's some secret organization, and I believe that they are going through Chicago, targeting people, expressways, walking, something like that. Some of it has to do, I believe, with pushing black people out of Chicago, out of certain areas. But I just believe it's just the business of white supremacy to create terror. And one aftermath of this terror is it turns black people against each other. Because black people buy into the hype the same way white people do. Oh, these young people, they can't. You don't know who's killing who. And I keep telling people that. You don't have a clue as who's killing. Why do you assume it's a gangbanger? Because the media said it? Oh, I know, the media doesn't lie about anything. My thing is, if most of this killing is being done by gang members are the easiest people in the world to catch. Easiest people in the world to catch. First of all, they do a lot of talking. Secondly, they don't generally travel alone. So right then and there, you've got the opportunity for somebody to know something just by the fact that you've got multiple people who witness what is going on. And then you've got gang members who, for the most part, stay in and out of trouble. So we all know that when somebody gets in trouble, they cop a plea. Plus, the gangs are full of informants. And Chicago has a lot of cameras, allegedly, on these corners, but they never show you any video of any cameras. So I'm thinking, okay, if gang members are doing all this killing, how come very few of them are getting caught? Every once in a while somebody does, but how come? So I don't buy that. I think quite frankly, we are in a very precarious position here, in part because we don't understand the system, and our lack of understanding or our lack of apathy or our lack of unwillingness to participate in anything has made us very vulnerable. And what advice would I have? That's a tough one. The one thing I would say is become knowledgeable as much as you can. get out of denial. Toughen up and look at the situation we are in for real. Be careful about the entertainment that you ingest, because this entertainment will confuse you unless you've got your thinking cap on. And then you can look and see what they're showing you. And I would also say stop wasting your money. Stop supporting the system of white supremacy in ways that harm you and your family. You know, stop buying a lot of things that basically enrich the wrong people, designer clothes, fancy cars, all of this stuff. You know, we really have to start changing our mindset about what's important. And as long as material things are super important, people won't be. So I would say, you know, try to go up the path of informing yourself, because really the first step is education, educating yourself. You know, people say, well, we got to have a strategy. No, you can't do anything if you don't understand the system. I watch people running here and fro in these different organizations, marching, bullcats. You know, I'm not knocking them. I admire them for trying to do something, but it's not going to work because they don't understand the system. They don't understand when the TV cameras are filming you, you're doing something wrong. That's when you know you're doing something wrong, is when the media is covering it. Because if you were doing something right, they wouldn't want anybody to know about it. And the second mistake is thinking that you have to broadcast your intentions to white people, that you got to let them know everything you're thinking and doing. And I'm not talking about violence or anything. I'm just saying, you know, as soon as the cameras show up and start filming you and gladly put you on television, you know you've done something wrong. So I'm just saying you can't understand how to counteract the effect of white supremacy if you don't understand what it is. So I would say don't get involved in anything. Educate yourself first. And learn to be a leader of one. Don't let anybody, including me, do your thinking for you. Learn to think for yourself.
Context of white supremacy. Just real quick before my question, in terms of the timing of these shootings, particularly the shooting of the five officers, that's what was reported in Dallas. This was within the same day President Obama was out of the country at the time, where he made comments. He spoke about racism. And I think we talked before, generally, when he makes some sort of public comment about racism, white supremacy, whites retaliate immediately. We've talked about that before, but this happened within hours of him coming out and making a comment about the shooting of Philando Castile and Alton Sterling. He even added context, I believe, that sound clip on the program earlier this month. The second point where you talked about the you do not think that it is other black people who are responsible for all these shootings of black people in Chicago. Others have started to report the same thing, that they also had that suspicion that that is what's happening, that whether it's the notorious Chicago Police Department or other entities, white supremacist controlled entities that are engaged in killing these black people and then easily just blaming and saying it's black hoodlums that are doing it. Other people have started to promote the same theory and why they think that way. And that's even hinted at in The Purge repeatedly, where they even have a white character at one point who comes out and says, well, and he's a government official, where he says, well, people weren't killing enough. They weren't doing enough killing, so we had to get involved and help get the numbers up and do some extra killing ourselves. This is a government official saying this. With regards to the shootings with Micah Xavier Johnson, suspected shooter in Dallas, and then Gavin Long, suspected gunman in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where you were saying that you were suspicious, they had military backgrounds. I also think that in an era where it seems that cell phone footage and cameras are ubiquitous, Dallas is a big city. There was a march at the time that this was going on. I have not really seen lots of good footage where you could see an image of who the shooter was in Dallas. I've seen several clips that were from a distance of a shooting taking place, but you couldn't really make out who the person was. The situation with Gavin Long, I have not seen any video footage of what happened in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, just kind of one grainy image where they said, oh yeah, this is the, you know, out of control Negro maniac Gavin Long. But I mean, it was not, in an era of HD and digital everything, it was not the best what I've been accustomed to in terms of racist white supremacists image producing. there are a lot of black people who said, hey, I think this is great. The police have been terrorizing black people for a long time and getting away with it. Sandra Bland, Tamir Rice, the Philando Castile just this month, Eric Garner, long legacy. Rekia Boyd in Chicago, long legacy of this happening. I'm happy about this. I celebrate this. What do you say to the folks who think that this is great, that this is black people standing up to racism?
I would say that they don't understand this. I understand the feeling, you know, of course. You know, anybody that gets greatly mistreated, whether it's an individual or a group of people, wants to see somebody pay for the crime. They want some kind of payback. However, I would definitely caution anyone listening to the sound of my voice, do not attempt to promote that idea yourself. Don't say it. Don't say it online. Don't say it, period. You know, first of all, most people aren't going to do it, so I don't think there's any danger of that. But I did hear the story of one young black female on Facebook, who had said she was going to do something. I don't remember exactly what. And I believe they arrested her. So I would say don't get caught up in bravado. This is not a game. We are not, this is not about selling wolf tickets you can't cash, that you can't back up. I would say I understand your feeling, but like Dr. Wells and Mr. Fuller always say, which I struggle with that, is you have to think logically and not emotionally. They want us to be emotional. Why do you think they keep showing us the video? Why do you think they kept televising the things that they're doing to us? Because they want us to be in an emotional state, because when you're emotional like that, you're not logical, you're not reasonable, you're not rational, and you're not going to have a strategy that works. So we have to resist the impulse to overreact. First of all, we do not want anyone, black people, to go around shooting anybody. We are not in a position for that to be a strategy, and we need to be real about that. So I would say, while I understand the emotion, you know, it's a human emotion, of course. If people are mistreating you, you want somebody to stop them. If people are mistreating you and getting away with it, you want them to pay for it, absolutely. But it's not a strategy that works. You know, so I would just say, whatever you do, don't make your feelings public. Don't get online. Don't get on the Internet. Don't send tweets. Don't send emails. Don't send phone messages or texts or anything talking about how that was a good thing and I want to do it too. You know, just be careful, because they don't think anything about coming after you and ruining your life.
In short order, I might add, ruining black lives in short order.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on, I guess, even before I get to that, because it did happen today, speaking of police terrorism, they announced that they were dismissing all the charges against the officers with the death of Freddie Gray in Baltimore. A lot of folks were upset with Marilyn Mosby and saying, you know, this is a black prosecutor, and she failed. No convictions. No one will be punished for the death of Mr. Gray in Baltimore. What are your thoughts on the dismissal and people being frustrated or upset with Marilyn Mosby?
Again, if they understand the system of white supremacy, they know that she was never in charge to begin with. We got to let go of this notion that black people with positions of power and titles actually have any real power behind those titles. They don't. They don't. Basically, they're there to take either the fall, the blame, or to mask what is really happening, and that's racism, white supremacy. Anytime you see a black person with a title, particularly a very public title, connected to to politics or to law enforcement, you need to take that as a warning sign that black people are going to be harmed, because those people are going to be used to mask what is going on. Those people have no real power, and I'm talking about from Obama on down. I know folks want to believe otherwise, but let me just ask you this question. If a person or group of people is powerful enough to nominate, to finance, to vet a candidate, how in the world does that candidate suddenly become more powerful than the people that finance them? And this applies to Hillary as well, and Clinton and any other people. Does it make sense to you that I'm the one with the power to pick you, but once I've picked you, you're going to tell me what to do? So, you know, if you follow the logic, it doesn't make sense that a law enforcement agency that has a history of abusing black people is going to put a black person in charge who wants to change that or who is capable of changing that. It doesn't make any sense. It's like the mob deciding that they're going to bring a black person in to be the mob boss because the black person wants to destroy the mob. So, you know, I think it's very typical of us to blame another black person. But of course, she may have come into the office with good intentions. She may have been naive, as most of us are, thinking that her title meant something. Well, I think she found out it didn't mean anything. And if she didn't play ball or whatever else happened, she's going to have a problem. So I would say it's wasted energy to blame her because she was never in charge to begin with. And for us to blame her just puts us back in the same old quagmire, taking the focus off white supremacy and white supremacists and putting it on another black person. And that's why we're like dogs chasing our tails, because we always wind up turning back to the other, to some black person, blaming and castigating and name-calling them. They have, when they put black people on TV, you know, the Cornel West and the different people like that, what do? They spend all their time bashing other black people. Why do you think they're on the air? They're on the air because they bash other black people. So, but do they get on and bash white people? Nah. They might say one particular individual white person was wrong, but they don't get on there doing that. I mean, so anytime you see a person with a public position, with a mic in their face, with some access to public airwaves, you can be sure that they are knowingly or unknowingly aiding in the system of white supremacy.
Context of white supremacy. Just saw Dr. Cornel West last week. He was at the he was talking about the conventions going on for the presidential election and giving his reason why he was voting for Jill Stein, Dr. Jill Stein, and not going to support Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. Democratic National Convention is going on right now, and I believe, speaking of black people with a title, President Obama is speaking this evening. Might even be on stage as we are broadcasting live. I think it's a little bit early. I don't think he's there yet, but he will be speaking tonight up in Philadelphia. What are your thoughts on how all of this has proceeded to this point with the presidential election? And are you going to be voting Jill Stein, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump?
You know, the first thing that came to my mind is, if they're going to be on television, we got to end the show quick. I mean, we just got to get up the air. You know, I can't miss one of these riveting speeches. But anyway, first of all, good for, you know, I didn't know that Cornel West wasn't going along with the party line. So that's good. That's good. That's good. Maybe he'll, I don't know who Jill Stein is. I'm sad to say, I have no idea who that is.
Green Party candidate.
Green Party, okay, because I voted for the Green Party the last two elections. You know, and the only reason I was there to begin with was I was voting. I think they had some referendum, local referendum somewhere. But I did vote for the Green Party twice. I think once was the young lady, the black congresswoman.
Cynthia McKinney.
Right. She was. I think she was the first one. And then the second one, I didn't know who it was, but I didn't really care. I just wasn't going to vote for the major party. Am I going to vote? I really have no intention of doing so. I don't even think I'm going to go for the Green Party. Well, definitely not voting for the major parties. I don't even see the point to that. I know people say things to me in the email and say, well, you know, sometimes the lesser of two evils. Well, just the fact that you say the lesser of two evils says you're voting for what you believe is an evil. And I understand the rationale, but me, given my opinion about the political process at this point, I don't think it makes a difference. And I tell people, don't let them Pavlov dog you into running away from Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not going to run anything. Don't let them chase you toward Hillary. Think for yourself, because there's a lot of manipulation going on. You know, there's a reason Donald Trump gets so much publicity. If they were really afraid of Donald Trump, if he was really an outsider trying to upset the apple cart, they would cut his mic. Think about how popular Donald Trump would be if hardly nobody knew he was really running. So why are they aiding and abetting his exposure if he's a real problem? It doesn't make sense to me. And people say, well, that's because the networks make money. The white supremacists print money. They don't care about money like you and I do. They don't do things for the money. The money comes along with the loot, with the looting of the nation, of the country, of the world. the money just is part of the byproduct. I'm sorry. So I really have no intention of voting. I think what I might do is polish my toenails on the night of the election, but I don't think I'm going to vote because I just think it's a fraudulent process. And I think what I would love to see is nobody show up. That's what I would love to see. Because if nobody shows up, then the people who run the elections have to sit up and think, uh-oh, what's going on? Why isn't anybody falling for this con game? That's when you make them stop and think, when you don't put, act like a programmed animal, run into the polls. So what about you? Are you going to vote?
I'm undecided. I will publicly let folks know, but I would not count on it. I will say this. I am much more enthused, regardless of who wins, the party that is going down when January 2017 comes and President Obama exits the White House. Man, it is going down. I am going to celebrate the way many black people celebrated when he was inaugurated back in 2009. It is going to be a gleeful day for Gus T. Renegade, but I'll have to talk about that. I get giddy just thinking about it. What is your comment? What's your response, rather, to people who say that is the most irresponsible thing I've ever heard a black person say, that they're not going to vote, they're not going to participate, that is shiftless Negroes like you that will make it possible for Donald Trump to get in office, that you got to go vote, that you got to participate, that you cannot just be that irresponsible and not go participate. Plus, there are other local ballot initiatives and things that are also going to be on the ballot come November. It's not just the presidential election. So it's totally irresponsible to make a claim like that and say that you're serious about trying to solve some of these problems black people are facing.
Have you been talking to my distractors? I just like them. I mean, I've got emails and I've gotten, the only reason I could see me, well, how do I feel about that? First of all, if there's some local initiatives, which is what brought me to the polls 4 years ago, just to vote for that, but I didn't vote for either major party candidate then or that. You can always go and vote for the issues that you find important. There's no law that says you have to vote for things that you don't, on the ballot that you don't have a, no dog in the race, that you don't believe in. You don't have to vote for everything on the ballot. If you want to vote for local initiatives, go and do that. And write yourself in as a candidate, if a blank is there. You don't have to vote for either candidate. But for those people that say, what I get a lot of is, and I used to say this, so I really can't be too disparaging, but my ancestors died for the right to vote. Well, I got a response to that. Our ancestors fought for a lot of things, not just the right to vote. They were on the battle lines. They saw voting as a right of a citizen. They wanted full citizens' rights. They didn't just want voting rights. They were fighting on many different fronts. And back then, maybe the vote meant something. The vote certainly isn't what it is now. So maybe when you voted, it was actually counted, or maybe it actually represented some independence between the parties or some independent between the candidates, I don't know. But you can clearly see now that when Bush got in, when Clinton got in, it continued the policies, particularly the trade policies of Clinton. When Obama got in, when Bush got in, he initiated a whole lot of anti-constitutional, I won't even call them laws because they're really not legally laws, Patriot Act, different things that stripped away constitutional rights. Obama extended those legislations. So when you look and see what's going on, it's just a continuation of the previous administration on almost every level. So I think if our ancestors could have seen the condition of black people today after 60 years of voting, I don't think they'd be as enthused about supporting the right to vote. They were supporting the right to be full citizens with all full citizens' rights. I suspect if they could see what the vote really represents today, they might say, hey, we need a new strategy. And my other point about my ancestors is you don't wear the same clothes you did 60 years ago. You don't wear your hair the same way you did 60 years ago. You don't even eat the same foods necessarily the way you, you don't live the way you did 60 years ago. because your ancestors lived a certain way 60 years ago, that doesn't mean you're locked into that. Whatever they thought was the right thing at that time doesn't mean it's the right thing today. You know, what is it? I mean, you know, are we not capable of thinking that perhaps if a strategy doesn't work, that it's time for a new strategy? Clearly, voting hasn't worked for us. So why would we stay locked into a strategy that doesn't work for us? And that's the thing that you know, it's not logical to me. You know, you can vote if you choose to vote, but I don't see how it's really benefited black people. And it's just time for a new strategy. And I think it's time to let go of things that don't work. But, you know, again, if a person wants to vote, that's their prerogative. But nobody's going to shame me into doing it. And that's really basically my general response when somebody comes at me with an ancestor stuff. And the last thing that I would add to that is if the only way we honor our ancestors is once every 4 years or is going and push a button in a box, I don't think that's a whole lot of honoring myself. I think if we're pretty much apathetic and uninvolved except for times to vote, I don't see how that's honoring anybody.
Amen. 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 I think the best thing we could do to honor our ancestors would be to solve this problem and say,
right.
Amen.
Right.
We will, my great-great-grandchildren will not have to go through what we went through and what we were fighting and trying to go vote and everything else to problem that we were trying to solve. I think that is what they would be most pleased to see their descendants do. Context of white supremacy, again, our guest Pam. Just with the Democratic National Convention this week up in Philadelphia, one thing that has stood out to me, that there's been so much talk about the disunity in the party and the corruption. They had these emails come out and accusing Democratic leaders, Debbie Wasserman Schultz and others, of being biased towards Hillary Clinton and doing things to, as they call it, laundering funds for the Hillary Clinton presidential run. And lots of folks are upset. Lots of the folks that were supporting Bernie Sanders, another racist suspect, they've been upset. They've been booing at the convention and protesting and very upset. That's been big news, all this disunity amongst the Democratic Party this week. And at least what I've seen, a lot of folks have said that it's been First Lady Michelle Obama. She spoke on Monday. I think she was the keynote speaker Monday evening. And they said it was one of the best speeches in the history of the Democratic National Convention. Former Attorney General Eric Holder spoke yesterday. That'd be Tuesday evening. And as I said, I believe President Barack Obama speaking tonight, keynote speaker this Wednesday. And to me, it just stuck out having all of these black people come to help this white woman get in the White House. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that black people are always being used to promote the agenda of white supremacy. I think that it creates more of a illusion that we actually have some responsibility for what's going on. You know, the black faces everywhere, talking, getting appointments, this and that, you know, standing behind white people as they talk about whatever political decision is going down. I think black people, without even understanding it, without even being a parent, are being scapegoated. I think we're always being put out there, almost like on the front lines. And I think it's very symbolic to have black people constantly assisting white people. I think it creates the psychology within the black mind that's what black people are supposed to do, assist and rescue and save the day. It's even in the movies. We were talking about that earlier, how a lot of movies, like The Purge or whatever, they constantly show black people rescuing white people. Even Halle Berry was in a movie where she played some 911 operator. And she put on her man suit. She put on her man suit to go rescue that white woman. I mean, it was like, oh, no, you're not going to harm this white woman. So they've even turned black women black women have always been the rescuers, and one from them, from Oprah, who was always comforting the white female guests, to the Mammy films. You know, so black people have always been put in a position of being responsible for the happiness and success of white people. and it's in the movies, and obviously it's in politics today. And what I have found, too, is the black woman, as she gets pushed out of mainstream television, mainstream movies, as she gets pushed out, the black man now is taking her place as the mammy. So you see a ton of movies today where the black male, and you said in The Purge, two different black men give up their lives to rescue white people. So black people are literally just being programmed for self-destruction, to aid and abet white people, even to, against their own self-interest. So I think that's just more of it. And locking in the black people thinking that the best black person to be is the one that white people approve of and applaud and that helps white people. You know, so we've really been programmed to put white people's interests above our own. So I think those, that spectacle of Michelle Obama and that spectacle of Eric Holder and the spectacle tonight of Obama is more of the same. It's about deception, using black people to deceive the public about what is really going on. And by doing that, making us share the karma of the wrongdoers. And I think a lot of this putting black people in these quote-unquote positions of power is about hopefully black people will share the karma of the white collective for the crimes that they're committing. But it's not going to turn out that way, I don't think. Because, now this is just my belief, it might sound a little far out, but I believe in universal justice. I just do. And I think the universe keeps track of the offenders, particularly the biggest offenders. And the universe is not going to be confused by the ones who are acted upon versus the ones who are the actors. The white supremacists are the actors. The non-white people are the ones acted upon, even when they're in a role where they appear to be in charge. But I think a lot of the stuff that they have black people doing with these big titles and big fake positions is the hope that black people will share their karma as they lie and deceive and harm the public.
Context of white supremacy. Before we nab any folks who have comments or questions that you'd like to ask Pam, the number to dial is 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. We'll try and nab as many callers as we can. It's been so many things that have taken place this month. To me, it's almost wild because I remember the comments and the deception, because they were saying that this was the largest single shooting, mass shooting, in the history of the country just last month. And it seems forgotten now. The shooting down in Orlando that was widely talked about as a quote unquote hate crime, and again pushing this notion that there's a war on gay people, gay white people, what they're talking about really. Did you have any observations from what happened with that shooting? Because it does to me, at least, it seems like it. People don't even talk about that anymore since there's been so many things that have happened.
I didn't buy that. Again, to me, it seemed like a false flag. It seemed like a staged event. You know, in particular, when you look at some of the videos that people have posted on YouTube, which you have to take them with a grain of salt, but they do show people leaving and heading in a direction away from when their shootings occurred. It makes no sense. You know, I don't know if, you know, if you can rely on the video or not, but the thing that stood out in my mind before I saw the video was, okay, this one guy goes into a nightclub armed to the teeth with enough weaponry to take out dozens and dozens of people. And he just comes through there and nobody, this is the summer, right? He didn't have on a coat. So I'm wondering, how did he get all these weapons and all these, you know, the ammunition or whatever in there without being noticed? And the other thing is, I know somebody that was in the Marines, and he was a gunnery, I don't know what you would call the term, but he gunnery, a weapons expert or something, and he said that he didn't think it was possible for that guy to go in there and kill that many people with a place being crowded like that and security in there. And he just was able to do that, come in with all those weapons and kill all those people that quickly by himself. So, you know, I don't really know what happened, but I do know that the things that happen seem to have a purpose. And one of the things that I think is pushing people toward allowing or agreeing with gun control. You know, I think a lot of this is aimed at disarming the American people, and we're creating a lot of terror and psychological harm to the population. You know, because if you can get people to distrust each other, and also to elicit sympathy, maybe to build sympathy for this homosexual agenda that they're pushing. You know, I'm not going to use all these fancy terms. You know, you can call yourself gay, you can call yourself LGBT, I can't remember all that stuff. Homosexual is homosexual. If you're participating in sexual activity with a person of the same sex, you're homosexual. You can call it any other thing you want. Let's use the right term. And if the behavior is not incorrect, why is there a problem? Why do you have to name it something else? If the behavior is correct, why don't you call it what it is? Why do we have to make up new terms for it if it's correct behavior? So I don't use those terms, and I'm not going to use them. And this is nothing against hating anybody or disliking anybody. I'm just saying, you know, if I'm a Christian and I practice Christianity, what's the problem with calling me a Christian? If I'm a heterosexual, what's the problem with calling me a heterosexual? So I just think it's a lot of very false events happening, and I think that was one of them, you know, with a political agenda of some kind.
For sure, context of white supremacy, lots to keep in mind. They even followed that up, the whole quote-unquote gay rights movement, with moving the All-Star game from North Carolina because of the bathroom bill in North Carolina that they've been talking about so much over the past few weeks or so. With that, I'll nab some of our callers, see if we can get as many of the folks in who have questions. We do not have time for speechifying. Just get your question in, and we'll see if we can nab all our callers. But if you have comments, we can maybe get those in before the program ends. But no comments, just get your question in. Thank you kindly. Thomas in New York, did you have a question for Pam? You should be with us.
Yeah, I do. I had some good comments. But my question is, where do you see first I want to say good evening to both of you, Pam and Gus. Pam, where do you see us going forward with the robotic technology and using it against black people going forward in the future?
The robot technology, I've heard a lot of stuff as far as the impact that robots will have on people, on especially people who are working, that it will put a lot of people out of work. And I think that perhaps that is part of the agenda, is to make human beings more obsolete, particularly black people, because black labor is really essentially obsolete, and it's been that way for a long time. I do think it's a weird situation because robots don't buy anything. So the only way I can take that and take it a step further is they must plan on getting rid of a lot of people, because they're going to have all these people out here that allegedly won't be working, that really have no economic future, and you're going to have these robots, and you're going to have, the economy is scaling down. So the only thing I can come up, the only rationale I can come up with is they must be planning on eliminating, they talk about it all the time, reducing the world's population. So, but it's an interesting thing is that robots don't buy anything. So it seems like a really wrong-headed. But the people in charge are sociopaths and psychopaths anyway, so you really can't expect humane thinking from them. Or even at times, sometimes they appear to even be a little bit illogical. But, yeah, I've heard that. You know, the robots, right now, everybody's replacing black labor. You think about the movies today. People need to pay attention to this. In the so-called films about, quote-unquote, black American history, they don't hire black actors, American actors, or actresses to do the roles. It's like we're being purged. Black American people seem to be being purged out of everything, out of the major baseball, out of really good roles in movies, out of housing, you know, the neighborhoods, gentrification, out of the educational system, closing schools and not helping the historical black colleges stay open, out of the workforce. A lot of black people are being purged out of the workforce. So it's like we're being purged, and we don't even seem to notice it. But yeah, I do think that a lot of this is aimed at black people. I think there's something about this white supremacy system that has black people in its sights. We seem to be the main targets. And there's a reason for it. And the question is for us to figure out what that reason is so that we can come up with a strategy to counter it.
Appreciate that, Thomas in New York. The caller at 0592. Did you have a question for Pam? None here. Let's try again. 0592, are you with us?
Yeah, good night. Have you heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I only have commentary, so I'll hold off.
All right, on. Appreciate that. Thank you. the caller in Florida, caller in retired firefighter in Florida. Did you have a question for Pam? Hmm?
Greetings. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, Miss Pam.
Greetings.
You primarily answered my question through your opening interviews. It was about the usefulness of vote, quote unquote, professional voting. You primarily, without even knowing what my understanding is, kind of like said the same thing that I would have said to it. What do you think about this? From the standpoint of all of the many, many different problems that non-white black people have, I mean, you can go through all nine areas of activity, and you can state longer this show would last of our problems in each of those people activities. Why do we think that those problems can be solved through the system of white supremacy's version of the voting process? What's your take on that?
Hi. I think it's due to the programming. We've been programmed for a very long time. I guess it's when you're trapped in a system, and black people are basically captives in a system. And so the captives, a lot of times, don't see a way out of the system, so they try to survive within the system. And what we've been taught from the time we were little is that one way to survive in the system is to participate in the political process by being voters. And given that most people do a lot of critical thinking, they don't really question what they've been taught, whether it be the church or whether it be politics. And so I think a lot of it's just programming, bad programming. And I think one generation after another reinforces that. You know, people imitate what their parents did. They imitate. So we just keep the chain going because that's all we've been taught to do. But I'm hoping that some people will begin to think for themselves and say, well, listen, if this is a 60-year-old strategy for black people and we've literally got nothing out of it, then maybe it doesn't make sense to rely on it.
Well, last but not least, Dr. Johnson, I heard Dr. Johnson say something that I thought was profound. He says that the white supremacists do a good job of perking up this effort that they would like for us to participate in now, all of a sudden, voting, because of the idea without that being something to look forward to, non-white people would look for means that goes outside of their comfort zone, so to speak. I probably need to say something much more clearer than comfort zone. It would actually go out. It would be something like revolution of some type, something on our own thoughts as far as coming up with a solution to our problems. Does that sound correct to you?
Yes, it does. you have to give people hope. You know, the most dangerous person on the planet is a person with nothing to lose and nothing to gain. So they have to give people hope. And they want to do it in the context of what doesn't threaten the system. And black people going off the plantation and deciding that they're not going to follow the program anymore, it's going to be a problem for that, for sure. Mm-hmm. That's why they with Barack Obama, and they come up with these titles to make us think that we're making progress. That was one of the main things of Barack Obama's candidacy, was giving the illusion of progress.
Right. It's fascinating to see so many non-white black people even arguing over the support and or criticism of white people vying for office. Ugh.
Yeah, it is something.
Just nauseating. Nauseating. Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
Caller at 9973. Do you have a question for Pam?
Yes, I do. Good evening, Pam. Can y'all hear me?
You can speak up. That would be helpful.
Okay, sure thing. So I got two quick questions. One relates to the uses of words. Now, there have been two influential black males, President Obama and Michael Jordan, who used the word, and this was a direct quote, cowardly, to describe the police killings, the alleged police killings in Louisiana and Texas. I wanted to know if either of you have heard the use of the term cowardly to describe police killing black males, what effect you think that has on people. And then the second question, I guess just Pam could answer. Pam, are you aware of that show that came out on Nickelodeon with the quote unquote gay interracial couple? Apparently, my cousin was watching. My cousin caught this show on television while his two young children, 4 and 2.5, were watching it, and he turned it off and said, "You know, that's not what I'm trying to teach in my house." Are you aware of that show, and like, what are your thoughts on it?
No, I'm not aware of that. I can't remember last time I was thinking. No, I'm not aware of that. I do know that I've noticed that out of every so-called homosexual encounter that a non-white person, not just black people, non-white person has, it's always with a white person. Have you noticed that they never let two black homosexuals, come together. They never let two Hispanic homosexuals come together. The partner, from what I've seen, is always a white person. So I think that's super significant, very significant. Black people aren't allowed to be sexual beings unless white people are benefiting from their sexuality. So I think that's serious, serious, serious psychological programming. We are really being programmed to despise and separate ourselves, despise each other and separate ourselves. And you can see it reflected in the behavior of black people out here today. The way black men and women kind of, just look at each other. It used to be you could make eye contact and get a smile. You can't even do that anymore. So this programming has been powerful. And when they do show black men and women together, it's always a negative situation. Always. Always a negative situation. Even the movies. Always a negative situation. One person's at another person. Somebody's harming somebody. No, I'm not aware of that show. But we are definitely being programmed. I think it's almost like they want to just make us the perverse symbol of everything that's wrong with the world. And I'm not calling homosexual people perverse. I'm simply saying that there's a great deal of the world's population that does think it's perverse. So I'm just saying that it just seems like the imagery of our sexuality is just really distorted.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that response, Gus. If you have time, I would like your thoughts on that second question that I asked too about the term cowardly and individuals using it.
I didn't hear that. I know Michael Jordan spoke up recently. I didn't remember seeing the word cowardly coming out of him or Obama. So I, You said they both said it, called it cowardly?
Yeah, I actually, I remember President Obama saying the term last week, but I actually looked it up in the newspaper just to make sure that was the exact term he used, and that was the exact term that they both used, so.
Was he calling the police people that shot, now I thought he may have said the people that shot the policeman were cowardly. I didn't think he called the police cowardly.
No, he didn't. He called the alleged black males who killed the police officers. He called them cowardly. And Michael Jordan did the same thing.
Okay, because I was thinking, it don't sound like Obama calling the police cowardly.
He said the paragraph with Michael Jordan, and this was at the beginning of his letter, he says, as a proud American, a father who lost his own dad in a senseless act of violence, and a black man, I have been deeply troubled by the deaths of African Americans at the hands of law enforcement and angered by the cowardly and hateful targeting and killing of police officers.
Right. Party line. Standard party line. Again, I tell, it's always my premise, my mantra is I totally just my mantra. I don't expect any support or help from black people who are given a mic. I don't expect it. If they were going to speak like me, like Gus, like some of you out there, they wouldn't give them a mic. And whatever little security and safety they have, they would take it away. I mean, I don't even know what happened with Bill Cosby. I won't even get into whether he's innocent or guilty. But my thinking is he made somebody mad. Not because he's not, I don't believe he's being prosecuted because of the crimes. Because it was well known in the Hefner mansion that women would be drugged. Hugh Hefner probably taught him how to do it. So I'm saying I believe whatever Cosby's toes he stepped on, that's why they came after him, because there had been common knowledge about the drugs and the women and the, alleged rapes. It had been well known for over 10 years. So what I'm saying is when these black figureheads come forth and make a statement, they better say the right thing. Now, they can say something that sounds halfway politically correct, like they're supporting black people. But believe you me, they're not going to step on any white toes. And that's why I dismiss them. Now, I know I'm not telling anybody else to do it. I don't expect any aid and comfort from black people who get a mic. No aid and comfort. And I've never been disappointed.
My response to the question... the context, because I did hear President Obama use the term cowardly as well, and several other people who were talking about these incidents, the context that they generally try to portray that these officers were shot from behind, or that I've heard the word ambush used in all of this, that, a real man wouldn't have, done this, a real soldier wouldn't have done this. I find it interesting, or I guess even before I continue, I should have prefaced all this. Both of these individuals, Michael Jordan, President Obama, they're both victims of racism, so they certainly had VGQ. They said what they said. The use of the word coward, I do find it interesting because it's so widespread that this could not possibly be the act of someone who had a legitimate, valid response to being terrorized, and so they decided that violence was not going to be unilaterally practiced against black people, that this immediately has to be dismissed as a coward, a maniac. I think they did the same type of thing with Ismael Brinsley. Anytime there's any sort of counterviolence on the part of black people against the perceived problem of racism, white supremacy, it is delegitimized in some way, shape, or form. Also, just the word coward is interesting because so many of these officers, part of their justification for killing black people is that they were afraid. They don't call those killings cowardly. I've never heard anybody say that Daniel Pantaleo was cowardly and the rest of the NYPD when they choked out Eric Garner, or that Timothy Loman was a coward in shooting down a 12-year-old with a toy gun. Tamir, I cannot think of a single officer that gets branded as a coward for shooting down an unarmed black person, black child, black female, black male. Never. They're always tough job and you got to do it stressful. They're never cowards, even though they're saying they're afraid.
Yeah, and something else that they don't say either, Gus. They don't say that the black men were murdered. They don't use the term murdered. They probably use it with the cops, but they say killed. They don't say murdered. There's a huge difference between being killed and being murdered, if you really want to think about it. So they don't even use the term murdered. Killed by policemen. Well, if a guy's robbing a bank and he's pointing a gun at an old lady and the policeman shoots him, he's killing him. It has no burden of any kind of guilt on the part of the person that does the killing. It totally makes it neutral. Could go either way, justified, unjustified. But murder immediately it insinuates that an injustice was committed. And they don't use the word murder. See, I don't have any expectations of them. They can't really disappoint me. And I agree with you that they're victims of white supremacy. However, they don't rank in importance for me. I'm sorry, they don't. I have no expectations of them. Therefore, I don't give what they say any value, even though it does have value because it influences a lot of people and it creates a perception. But I have no expectations of them, so they never disappoint me.
Thank you both. I think you guys both kind of validated my observation on that front. So thank you. Thank you both for taking time to answer my question.
For sure. Appreciate that, D-Train. M1, did you have a question for Pam? You should be with us. M1?
Hey, good evening. Good evening, Pam, to everyone. Hey. Speaking of programming and con games, another movie on the Lovings is coming out. You know, Richard Mills' Lovings. And of all the actresses to play Mildred Loving, they get one named Ruth Negga, N-E-G-G-A. But my real point, my real question, Pam, in this war on cost era, how do people in your area, media, the general public, how do they report and talk about when a cop is killed by a black person and when a cop is killed by a white person?
Okay, when a cop is killed by a black person and a cop is killed by a white person. I don't think there's any
conversation. How is it reported and how is it spoken of in the general public where you are?
I'm trying to think of the last time a white person killed a cop. I think it's, generally speaking, it's not a lot of heat around it. It doesn't seem to be, you know, stoked up a whole lot. It's kind of like, okay, in the commission of a crime, these guys may have killed a cop. It doesn't happen often. Actually, the number of cops that are being killed in the line of duty has actually gone way down. From what I understand, most cops die from accidents, you know, like car accidents and stuff like that. So I don't even think there's a whole lot of cops being killed by citizens. But I think when a black person kills a cop, it's certainly going to be hyped up more because it's a war. White people don't consider themselves at war with each other. They consider themselves at war with us. So if we kill the cop, that's taking out a soldier, a race soldier. So, yeah, it's going to be hyped up and seen differently. And it's going to be the slaves rebelling on the plantation. And somebody's got to squash that rebellion. I think that, personally, the white collective sees the police as the first line of defense against the black hordes, okay? And that's why they allow the police to terrorize us and mistreat us, because they think it makes them safe. Not because they're scared of us. White people are not scared of black people. And I want us to get clear about that. If they were scared of us, these cops claiming they're scared, no, they're not scared of black people, or they wouldn't be all over black people. They wouldn't be following black people and studying black people and having sex with black people and just being around black people. They're not scared of us. You know, it's ridiculous. They think they're scared of us. What they're scared of, in my opinion, is retribution. They're scared that we're going to wake up. And they're scared that some kind of way they're going to be held accountable for the criminal behavior that they've exhibited over centuries. So when you've got somebody that you know should get retribution against you, you got to hold that person down and keep that person terrorized and keep that person suppressed and paralyzed. You don't ever want them to rise up or become healthy mentally or become sane psychologically. black person acting out against the police is seen as a rebellious act against the whole system, against all white people, and against white privilege and white power. And that's why white people would sit on a jury and acquit a policeman who obviously murdered someone, because they see that policeman as the defense against them paying for their crimes, and a policeman guaranteeing and protecting their white privileges and the system of white supremacy that guarantees those privileges. But they don't want to worry about the police keeping us in line because they're scared of us. Not scared of us. We should be scared of them.
I totally agree. The reason I asked that question is I discussed this with God. Last week, when everybody was talking about the gospel.
Did you have another question? I'm just trying to make sure we get all our questions in. Okay.
Yeah. Did you notice how when the Michigan courthouse shooting was reported, it was a dark day and law enforcement tragedy? The moment Kittle was revealed to be a white man, the story dropped. And even though this white man was a criminal with a 22-year history who raped and drugged and kidnapped a 17-year-old girl.
Yeah, I don't, you know, that sounds familiar, but, you know, I don't expect them. I mean, the system at this point, they've really got to push their agenda. They got a limited amount of time to really shore the system up and to turn it in the direction they want to turn the ship in. And I think that anything that goes against what they need to happen is probably going to be suppressed. You know, so I'm not surprised, you know. You know, there's probably white people kill more cops than black people do. I'm pretty sure of that. Because I think it's rare for black people to kill. Yeah, but as you can see, one or two black people killing a policeman becomes a national emergency. So, you know, same thing with white men, you know. I mean, they're more than likely to be the perpetrators of mass killings, but nobody racially profiles them. Nobody says, oh, here come a white man walking in there with one of those flat jackets on. We better watch out. No. So I'm just saying, this is a system of white supremacy. Black people, we have to understand, we're automatically perceived as enemies of the system. Because the system, when people know they're mistreating you, they're never going to trust you. Just like if you had somebody at work, and they were constantly doing stuff to you, you think they're going to turn their back on you? They knew, you know, they know that, you know that they've been dogging you out and doing things behind your back and trying to sabotage you. You think that person's going to trust you? The one that knows that they're mistreating you? They know they can't trust you. One day you might decide to do something to them. One day you might figure out what's going on and decide to get retribution. So a person that's mistreating you is never going to trust you. And that's what we don't understand about being here. We can jump through hoops. We can flip-flop. We can do somersaults in the air. We can be good Negroes. We can be good black people. We can get education. We can dress right. We can talk right. We can marry white. We can do everything humanly possible, which is what we've been doing. Appease, please, beg, cajole. And we still can't figure out why they don't accept us. They can't afford to. They know they can't trust us. And that's why a black person rebelling against the system is seen as such a threat. What if it's contagious? What if it wakes up the sleeping people? I'm just saying, if you know you're mistreating people, you better not trust them. You'd be a fool to trust them. And we better figure that out, that we're never going to be equal in a system where we don't have equal power. Forget it. The question is, what do we do about it? But we got to stop pretending that clothes and education and cars and white spouses and biracial children and all this stuff that we do, we got to stop pretending that that's going to make a difference. It's really not.
Appreciate that, M1. Caller at 4300-4300. Did you have a question for Pam?
Yes, good evening. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening to the host. Good evening to Pam. You're my favorite. I'm going to keep this short and sweet. I have two questions. I tuned in kind of late, so I don't know if you already addressed this one, but I'm going to ask. First is, what do you think is the agenda and the purpose of Black Lives Matter? That's the first question. Second question is, you touched on it briefly a few minutes ago about gentrification, but when we think of gentrification, we usually think about white people. But I'd like for you to go in a little bit deeper on your thoughts on all the non-American black people who seem to be coming here, Africans, Caribbean. And when I speak of Caribbeans, I guess I'm specifically talking about like Dominican people who are of darker skin. And I'm in New York City, so I see a lot of it. So you also have Indian people, Middle Eastern descent. I'd like to get your thoughts on the influx of all of these. Some of them are black, some of them don't categorize themselves as black for the most part. What do you think about that and the displacement of black Americans and your thoughts on the true agenda and purpose of Black Lives Matter? Thank you so much for taking my question.
Okay. Let me see if I got the questions. I know one was about Black Lives Matter. Another was about the influx of non-white immigrants, I think. And, okay, Black Lives Matter, I think it probably began as a very sincere movement. My fear is that anytime something picks up steam, they find a way to infiltrate it and direct the organization in the direction they want to go in. I think that the people that initially started it and a lot of people participated have good intentions. I don't think what they're doing is going to make any difference other than it could galvanize them or spur individual on to perhaps doing something beyond that, maybe changing what they think and say and do, and that would be good. But as far as changing the system, it's not going to do it because...
I was just gonna add that we know that what's his name, Warren Buffett, financially has backed them. So I have my theories on the purpose of it. I feel like they're here to kind of like agitate white folks. That's just my theory. But just knowing that fact, and they don't really seem to have a real clear direction other than going to different places and maybe protesting. So
anytime an organization starts picking up steam or getting national attention, it's going to be infiltrated. And it's going to be guided in a direction that makes it essentially futile. I think if it's a Black Lives Matter, one of those movements, I would be surprised if it wasn't. I think a lot of the young people that are in it are well-meaning, and I admire them for at least attempting to do something. But protesting and doesn't work. Again, old strategies for recurring and new problems. And I personally think when the media, I do think a lot of it is about agitation and instigation. You know, I do think it's about making black people the focus rather than the people that are wrecking the economy, rather than the people that are stealing people's blind and taking jobs from Americans and all the other things that are going on that are getting ready to happen. I think it is about making black people the scapegoat by constantly showing black people talking and complaining and protesting and blah, 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 you know, just that lightning rod. I think black people are being posed as a lightning rod for white rage. And then when you have the movies come along, like the Purge movies and The Secret Life of Pets, very deceptive, these cartoons. When you have that, again, it feeds into that white psyche and makes it appear that their biggest problem is black and non-white people. So I believe that, the Black Lives Matter group probably has been infiltrated and being steered in a direction that's going to benefit the system. But, you know, again, the young people, if you sat down and talked to them, most of them probably don't understand the system of white supremacy to any degree. They may have heard the term, but, you know, I don't buy into any organizations, period, because I think as soon as you start galvanizing a lot of people and making a public appearance and public statements, you've really defeated your purpose. As far as the, you asked about the immigrants.
Before you get to that, I did just want to say, because this has come up on the sure. program again, about Warren Buffett investing in Black Lives Matter, and wow. someone questioned whether that was true, and no one could provide any factual information, like no documents, to support that, and it was questioned whether or not, you know, this is actual fact. I have heard that before, but nobody could step forward to provide any evidence. I'm not saying that it's true or false, but I am saying I have not seen anything to substantiate that other than people just saying it. So if people do have evidence to support that, that would be good to see.
Yeah, because I didn't know if it was true or not. But, you know, people say all kinds of things, and then, you know, we don't necessarily know what's true. Yeah, so, regarding the immigrants, if I understand your question correctly, I think your question was, do I think they're basically here to replace black people or to push black people out? Was that your question?
What do you think is the purpose of that? Like, you touched on it a little bit recently before, that, you know, in the film, Black American. Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, okay, you go ahead. I think I can make it out.
I apologize, but I'm a couple of transportation, but you touched on it a little bit recently before, when you were talking about black films, how a lot of it, the actors are not black American, they're like from different countries, and even now what I'm noticing too, a lot of the people who they are tapping as far as like public people, or people in the public eye to discuss black issues, they're not necessarily black American people.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think there's an agenda against black Americans. I think that there's an agenda against all black people worldwide, but it does seem to be a peculiar kind of agenda toward us here. And it's almost as though you want to erase all vestiges of the crimes you've committed. Now, they've committed crimes worldwide against people of color, against African people, people in the Caribbean, certainly. But it seems like there's a peculiar relationship here between the white supremacy system and black Americans. And I do believe there's some significance, spiritual significance, in them targeting us the way they have. I couldn't explain it, but there's a reason for everything. And I do see the purging of black Americans out of almost everything. And, I think we're a unique group of people. I think given our history, we've overcome things that they thought would crush us. We're still in a bad situation. We still have a lot of psychological damage. But I still think there's something resilient about black Americans in particular. And I'm not denigrating or downplaying anybody else. I'm just saying I think there's something unique about black Americans. Our history is unique. Our experiences are unique. And for whatever reason, apparently this might be a threat of some kind. You've seen the purging of black people from the workplace for over 20 years, over 30 years. And I do believe that part of bringing people in from other parts of the country doesn't have anything to do with us. It has to do with the fact that they want a one-world government, and they're erasing the borders. They're trying to destroy sovereign nations so that people are all over the planet begging for work. So I think a lot of it's economic, their attempt to control the population of the planet by having no borders, having no sovereign nations, having everybody under their thumb. So I believe all that's part of the process, too, of having immigrants, encouraging immigration everywhere after you destroy your country and you got to leave. But having immigrants everywhere is the idea that, you know, sooner or later there won't be any sovereign nations anyway if they have their way. So I think some of it doesn't have anything to do with us, but I do think that there's a concerted effort that we're definitely being targeted for some reason. And I think a lot of it's psychological, like having black people go to movies about our history, and we're not in the leading roles. I think that is a huge, huge slap, and it has nothing to do with blaming. I don't blame the African or people from other countries. I don't blame them. They're just taking a job. They just got a job. It's just like the immigrants come over here and they get a job. You can't blame the immigrants. I mean, they're just getting a job. They don't run anything. But I do think that it is just part of the cruelty and the underhandedness and the slap-in-the-face type of joy that they elicit in fooling black people and, you know, just rubbing things in our faces that we may not even necessarily understand as an insult. So it's unfortunate, you know.
Appreciate that, caller in New York. Roz, did you have a question for Pam? Roz, did you have a question?
Yes, greetings to you, Gus. Greetings to you, Pam. I did have two questions. It's great to hear you this evening. Thank you for being on the program. My first question, I don't know if you were aware that the shooter in Dallas, Micah Johnson, had a white stepmother. And I was thinking two things. One, if he actually did the shooting because of the fact that he had a white step parent, it's possible he could have been white identified in some way. So it's possible he might not have done the shooting. And then the other thing was, if he did commit the shooting, is it possible that he might have watched his stepmother? Perpetrating acts of racism and white supremacy in her relationship with his father that might have helped him to better understand that there was a war being waged on us, and that could that have been a factor to trigger him to do what he did if he did it?
Oh, you know, I don't know. I do think that having a white step-parent certainly results in a lot of confusion. Whether or not, what type of step-parent she was, I don't know. He could have had a lot of confusion, a lot of, if he did the shooting, he could have had a lot of confusion, a lot of conflicting emotions. Because you just never really know what goes on behind closed doors. I do know that many times black children who are in, quote unquote, interracial, if you want to, for lack of a better word, households, they are often subjected to racism. It's really not as uncommon as people think. But would that be enough to drive him to do what he did? Who knows? And that's assuming that he did it. Hard to say. I really couldn't answer that.
All right. Thank you. My other question was one of the callers, Thomas in New York, discussed with me previously, and I believe he talked about it on the show, the fact that with the legalization of all drugs, or they're seeking to do so, that of course will be destroying the war on drugs, and that these shootings that these supposed black males were allegedly involved in are being utilized, or if these people might have been used to facilitate making black males the face of urban terror so that they can take guns not away from the general public, but specifically from black people, so that whatever they're planning to do down the road, we won't be prepared to defend ourselves.
Yeah, I definitely think they want to disarm us, for sure. And I think that's part of the reason there's so much terror in the black communities like Chicago, is to turn people against gun ownership, make them think that their problems can be solved by having strict gun control, which, of course, Chicago had the strictest gun control laws in the country, some of them, and it didn't stop the killing. So, you know, you wonder, what are people thinking? How does gun control stop gun violence? It doesn't, if you look in the places where gun control is the strongest. But I do think, absolutely, they don't want us to be. But I don't even know if they worry about us being armed, because we have such a limited ability to defend ourselves that I don't even know. And the weaponry that the government has now, the technology, but I definitely don't. I know they don't want us to be able to defend ourselves. But yes, black people are going to be scapegoated, and it became apparent to me in 2008. With the nomination of Barack Obama, that he was going to be a lightning rod for white rage, and that the main reasons he was put in office was to oversee, or not oversee because he's not in control, but to be the face on a lot of things that were going to make white people very angry. And so far, from what I understand, so-called race relations have worsened, not because Barack Obama did something to, you know, I mean, yeah, I don't hold them accountable for that. However, that black face being the signature behind so much bad legislation that, of course, he has no control over. He's just doing, he's just following orders. But I think that it just became apparent to me. Of course, it's probably always been that way, but it became apparent to me personally with his election that he was going to be a lightning rod, that he was going to be the face on a lot of bad things. And from what I have seen, that has been true. So, yeah, black people are being set up to be scapegoats, mass scapegoats for whatever's happening in this culture.
Now, Pam, would you say that President Obama being placed in office the way he has for the last 8 years was a ruse for the setup for the reconstruction of white supremacy via the coming election of Donald Trump? And thank you for taking my questions.
Okay, thank you.
Did you hear the question, Pam?
I thought he was making a statement. I'm sorry. What was the question?
Oh, the question was, do you think that the setup of President Obama taking office and being in office for the last 8 years was more or less a ruse for the reconstruction of white supremacy in the form of the upcoming presidential election, which I believe Donald Trump is going to win, and he's going to be the face of the reconstruction of white supremacy?
I think it's possible, because it's possible that, yes, they have a long, they do long-term strategies. They're not like the rest of us. We might plan a year or so in advance. These people plan decades in advance. And I believe the black presidency was planned decades in advance. And this whole thing was a setup. And, yes, it was a setup for a purpose. And could the purpose, like you said, be the reconstruction of white America or America via a candidate that claims he's going to do it? That could possibly be, but I do believe that the Barack Obama presidency was planned well in advance. And I believe that it certainly fits into the house of cards that they've created. And did they know that Donald Trump, if Donald Trump becomes president, was it planned? Yes. If he becomes president, in my opinion, it was planned. It's not a fluke. It's not a wild card. It's planned, because they don't let things happen by accident, not things that they can control. The things that happen by accident are things that are out of their control. But nothing that's in their control, and certainly the presidency is in their control. Nothing that happens that they can control happens by accident. It just doesn't make sense to think that they would let something happen that they didn't want to have happen, if they could stop it from happening. So, America's headed in a certain direction, and I think that should be clear to non-white people, particularly black people. And all the political things that are coming to place are all part of that strategy.
Before we hit the next question, I think, and this even just further goes to why I said I would like, some substantial evidence if people are questioning or going to consistently ask this question or make this statement in terms of Black Lives Matter being given money from Warren Buffett. Thomas in New York wrote in saying it was George Soros, and that's the name that I've generally heard associated with having given Black Lives Matter money. But I haven't seen any evidence of that either. And the Daily Beast, they have an article that is titled, "No, George Soros didn't give $33 million to Black Lives Matter." And this was written in the summer of last year by Ben Collins. Now, again, it could be, maybe it isn't, but at least there should be some evidence, like where did people get this information from, that this money was given, by whom, and, just evidence. We should ask that all the time anyway, because deception is the major weapon in the system of white supremacy. Just evidence in terms of where people got this notion from to begin with, and then we can move forward and make an accurate evaluation of things. Person wrote in a question. This is someone who said that they were born in your area of the world, Illinois. The question they wrote, "I grew up in the city of Chicago's West Side, K-Town to be exact, Adams and Kenton between Jackson Boulevard and Madison Street, where it has been known and popular for a couple of decades or more, where non-white black female prostitutes solicit.
Those who are familiar with Mr. Neely Fuller Jr.'s book and recent thoughts regarding the eighth area of activity, sex, in which he postulates according to the plans of the white supremacists, the black female vagina and its value is to become obsolete, and the white male anus is to be the new black vagina for the black male. And the black females are directly or indirectly being taught that the holy grail of supreme sexual real estate is the white female's vagina. If you are familiar with that area, have you seen recently a plethora of black men or black male transgender prostitutes? My siblings not only have witnessed the increase of black males in that area, but also territorial fistfights between the genders.
Yeah, I would... I know what area he's talking about. I'm never over that way, so I haven't seen the makeup of what's going on over there. But I do agree with the premise that the black female sexually is becoming obsolete in terms of being portrayed as a sexually desirable person. You never see that. If she's in a commercial, the rare time she's in a commercial, she's always by herself. She's by herself or with her children. She's never with a man. If she's in a TV show or movie, it's always some kind of problem or, you know, this and this and that. So, yeah, the black female is literally being portrayed as something undesirable. The white male, black men are literally being portrayed increasingly as homosexuals. If they're with a white woman, which is a form of homosexuality in terms of the power makeup, I do believe that black men and women are being warred upon sexually, absolutely. And I do believe that behind a lot of it is the hidden white male homosexuality that's rampant throughout this culture. And that the black male has become the more desirable sexual partner for the white male than the black female. And a lot of us don't understand how the homosexualization of our children, particularly the male children, is really, really, really taking hold. And some of it, I think, could be food-related, because you certainly can put substances in the food to upset the hormonal balance of people. A lot of it is psychological programming through the media, and some of it is situational, where a lot of, which I was surprised, but over the last several years, I became aware of how many black boys are being raped by white males, by adult white males. And, you know, it's just a war. It's a war against us sexually. It's a war to pit us against each other. I think a lot of, but this is my opinion. I could be wrong about this next thing I'm going to say. But the homosexuality I see amongst black females, I call it situational homosexuality. From the sexual confusion and the overall feeling that they're not going to find suitable male partners or that they're not sexually desirable to black males, I think has led a certain percentage of the black female population toward finding an alternative to the failed black male, black female relationship. And so I do just think that all this is a byproduct of the war against us that we do not understand. And a lot of this comes from the sexual perversion of white people collectively who have been allowed to run rampant, run their sexual head games and body games on us because we don't understand what's happening. But yeah, I can believe that. I can believe that the thing that he described over there on the West Side, and probably not just the West Side, but probably in multiple other places, is happening. It's very scary to watch the casualties mounting, black people in this mass sexual confusion. It's really very alarming.
Female caller in New York, did you have a question for Pam? You should be with us.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening. I just had, regarding Pam's comments on HBCUs and getting rid of black people, I just had commentary, so I'll save it to the end if I have time.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that. Caller at 5992, 5992, did you have a question for Pam?
Yes, hello everyone, and welcome, Pam.
Hi.
I came across an article about the Dallas Police Department. I'm gonna just read it to you, so make sure I get it so you can understand it. It just says that the Dallas Police Department, which was struggling to recruit officers, has seen a surge in job applications after the ambush shooting this this month to kill five officers. And they would say prior to that, they were even going to shut down the academy because they could not find anyone to, you know, anyone in Dallas to want to join the police department. Then all of a sudden, this surge came about. And my first impression was it is only going to get worse. I believe that the people are signing up just so they can get revenge. So, I mean, I may be wrong, but I just wanted your perspective on that.
You know, hearing that, my first thought is it doesn't sound true. In this bad economy, nobody wants to join the police force. Literally a very stable job that pays a living wage, good benefits, retirement benefits, and this day and age, somebody doesn't want to join the police force? I just find that a little, I understand that you read it. I just find it a little hard to believe. And I do think that it could certainly be something that's being hyped up. As though to say, look at what's being driven to do. People didn't want to join the police force, and now people are breaking the door down to join the police force. Maybe there are people that didn't consider a career in law enforcement who are now considering one, you know, for whatever reason. But it's hard to believe that they couldn't find anybody that wanted to take those jobs. Because I know when Chicago has exams for the policemen, they got lines going around the block. So I don't understand in a bad economy like this why somebody wouldn't, why they would have trouble recruiting people. But, you know, that's just my thought on it. But, yeah, absolutely, I can believe that maybe the number of people who want to join has gone up. You know, in a sense, okay, we need more foot soldiers. We got to get these Negroes under control. So I can believe that that definitely could affect maybe a rising interest in the police, in being a common policeman. But, yeah, it's, see, they see any kind of rebellion as a threat against this whole system. And a threat against the system is a threat against each individual white person who believes in that system.
Okay. Can I just, I want to refer to another incident that happened last week. I don't know if anyone listening or Gus or yourself is familiar with Dr. Boyce Watkins. He has a YouTube page where he comes in on a regular basis, talking about the issues going on with, you know, with black people in America. And he also have a business, for black people. And he got like 22,000 students. So last week, the New York Times called him up and started battling him about Mr. Gavin, the alleged Baton Rouge shooter, because he was a student in Dr. Boyce's class. And Dr. Boyce was on YouTube telling how he was constantly being badgered and questioned, and he was kind of telling people that he didn't really know this person. And, you know, then it came to the like that, yeah, okay, he came to a book signing of mine, but I still don't have no involvement with him, et cetera, et cetera. And they kept adding. And then the next day he came back on YouTube, and he was telling us that he said either he's paranoid, but there's a police car being parked outside his home, and, you know, he was, you know, just letting us know what's going on. So my point of this, when I heard you earlier said, you know, we need to be educated about the issues, but see, once we're educated, we can't even discuss them. So I think my question is there anything that you can suggest that we can do once we are aware of the facts? I mean, should we not talk about them? Should we talk about them? And it seems like we get in so much danger if we do.
Well, you know, if we're not going to talk about it, you mean talk about it as far as a group or talk about it? I think we do have to be careful about if you're going to have a public profile like Dr. Boyce, you do have to be mindful that the more people that pay attention to you, the more the wrong people are going to pay attention to you. So you always have to be mindful of what you say, you know, and try not to set yourself as a target. Should you stop talking? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, believe me, I'm not the bravest person that you ever want to meet. You know, if I see some danger coming, I'm running. However, at some point, you have to develop some sense of personal courage. And what that courage represents is up to the individual. But we can't expect to change anything if we won't even acknowledge it. And we can't expect to change anything if we won't talk to our children about it. I mean, at some point, black people, all of us, are going to have to give some courage. And that is stand for something. And even if you're not making yourself a public, you know, profile, you know, there's a lot of things you can do, and you still stay below the radar. Like in, I think, all four of my books, I talk about the ways that you can, you know, constructive ways that you can fight against the system without putting yourself at any risk. A lot of it has to do with the way you spend your money, with the people and things that you support. Would you support other black people who are trying to do something? Do you support black businesses when the businesses are run correctly? Do you teach your children not to admire somebody just because they look more white? Do you use the terms good hair and pretty eyes? There's so many. Do you support movies and television shows like Empire that degrade and diminish black people, particularly black relationships and black sexuality? There's a whole lot. I mean, you buy designer clothes and you walk around with a designer's name on your shoes and feet and back and purse who doesn't even want you to represent their product. There's so many things that we could do that don't put us at any risk. And what I have found is very difficult is to get people to do anything. You know, now this may sound self-serving, and I apologize if it does. I try to get people to leave reviews to encourage people to read, not just my books, Mr. Fuller's books, Dr. Wellesley's books, anybody's book. And I have a hell of a time trying to get people just to take 5 minutes to write a review. My point is this. Nothing's going to change if we don't do anything. And nothing's going to change if we remain apathetic and uninvolved. Nothing's going to change. I think too many of us are waiting for somebody else to do something. And we want to stay safe and silent in a corner someplace, waiting until the bread is cooked and the wheat's been harvested, and then come up for a slice. Well, it's not going to turn out that way. More people have to get involved, and you make your decision on what you're going to get involved in. You don't have to be in Black Lives Matters or start a Dr. Boyce type of channel. But there's so many things you can do that put you at no risk, that actually save you money. And I'm just saying, find something that you think you can be constructively engaged in and do it.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
The only thing I was going to add, I think Ramona Africa from the MOVE organization, she was on the program yesterday. The point that she made, that someone I hear frequently has made consistently, the system of white supremacy, this problem has to be solved because there are so many black people, the majority of black people, like Rekia Boyd, Sandra Bland, Tamir Rice, Eric Garner. They were not talking about racism, white supremacy. I guess you could move Sandra Bland out of that. She was. But the rest of the folks, you could move her out and we could just replace her. Michael Brown Jr. It's lots of victims of white supremacy. Alton Sterling. I mean, we have an endless list of black people who have been terrorized, killed. All of Daniel Holtzclaw's victims, this raping enforcement officer in Oklahoma City who was exclusively raping black females. If the problem would be solved by just black people saying, well, I just won't talk about racism, well, then fine. We could just shut the cows down. Pam, don't you write another word, and we'll just behave and be good little Negroes, and this problem will be solved. That's not what this is. White people terrorize and abuse black people all the time, regardless of whether they're saying anything about racism, white supremacy. So certainly they do harm. They have harmed, including killing a lot of black people who have tried to solve this problem and openly discussed racism, white supremacy. But they do that anyway. And that's why we need to be focused to solve this problem immediately. The person who called in from a block number, did you have a question for Pam? You should be with us.
Yeah, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, hi, Pam. It's good to talk to you again. I just want to ask you a couple of questions. What do you think about a lot of black people saying that we should put all our money in black banks when a lot of these black, so-called black banks aren't even owned by black people? And do you think it would be wise for a lot of black people to just leave this country and repatriate to Africa? Do you think that would be something that would be considered wise?
You know, I heard about some rappers in Texas that were going to put their money in these black banks, And again, you're right, it's important to know that these are black-owned banks, because if they're not black-owned banks, we're getting fooled again. I do think people are trying to do stuff, but I do think that without an understanding of the system, it's just going to be, you know, just it's just not going to have the results that they want. I think this understanding the system to the best of your ability is important before you have any kind of strategy. You just can't jump and, you know, put the cart before the horse. You have to actually have a horse. You have to actually have some mode of transportation to get someplace. The cart's not going to pull itself. And we keep building carts with no horses attached to them. So I think it's just imperative we understand the system. And unfortunately, white supremacy is global. I don't think we're going to be able to expatriate to another country and get away from it, because they're attacking Africa right now under the this current administration's of AFRICOM. You know, they're attacking African nations. A lot of these cheap oil prices that people are so happy about is really economic warfare against oil-producing nations, and it's hurting their economies. So it's not to give you a break. It's not to because there's an oil surplus. I mean, you know, where'd the surplus come from, you know? People still have cars. More people have cars than ever before. Where'd the surplus come from? So this is an economic strategy to harm the oil-producing nations. I heard Nigeria's having a lot of problems. So I don't think leaving this country is necessarily going to solve the problem until we change. See, the most important thing we have to do is we have to change who we are, where we are. And, yes, I would love to see us go someplace else. I'm just not sure that we could go someplace else and take this current mindset we have and make a difference, because we have to change. We're going to take ourselves everywhere we go. And if we don't understand the system and we're still grossly over-white identified and still anti-black and practice anti-blackness as almost as a religion, it doesn't matter where we go. We're going to take that mentality with us everywhere we go. So we got to take a stand where we are and change who we are. I think that would be the most constructive thing to do, is change who we are and change what we do say and think.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I'll mute myself.
The caller at 3844. Did you have a question for Pam?
Yes, I want to follow up on the woman who's asking about the immigration from non-white people. I've heard it theorized by people that the African immigrants are being used to push out so-called African Americans so that they can replace the slave story history with the immigration story, and probably don't know about it. And then that'll further facilitate them getting rid of black people, period. I wonder, what did you think of that theory, and have you ever heard of it?
I'm sorry. I'm. Could you repeat the question? I'm not sure I understood the question.
I've heard it theorized that African immigrants are being used to push out African Americans,
mm-hmm.
So that they can get rid of African Americans focusing on the history of African slavery and Jim Crow and everything up to now,
mm-hmm.
not having an influx of African immigrants, and then a new story beyond the African immigration story, because they'll be more prominent. And, you know, and they were never slaves in America, so they'll talk about African immigration and never replace the slave history story.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, what validity do you give that, number one? And number two, have you ever heard of it?
You know, I may have heard of it, and I do think it has a lot of validity, because I kind of suspect instinctively that part of the concerted attack against black people is that we're walking witnesses, walking evidence of what white America really is, and the history of white people. We're the most visible, it's like we're like a crime scene, and you got survivors. And I do think there's a huge desire on the part of white people collectively in this country to rewrite the history books, to erase the evidence of their crimes. And strangely enough, they might be crazy enough to think
that they can actually outpace their own karma. They can actually outrun their own karma. And I think that there's a very interesting psychology involved in that, to think that if you get rid of the evidence, the crime didn't exist. And that shows a deep, deep, deep level of sociopathy, a deep, undeniably deep, DNA deep level of sociopathy, to think if you get rid of the evidence, the crime didn't happen. What kind of person thinks like that? Well, unfortunately, I think we're surrounded by a lot of people who think like that. They don't. If you bring up slavery or past history, you see a real visceral reaction from a lot of white people. They get very angry. They don't want to think about it. They don't want to hear about it. They get very angry. And so I do think part of the history of black people here is part of the reason that we are seen in such an unfavorable light, is we're actually the walking evidence of their crimes. When they look at us and they see us in our condition, there may be something in the back of that mind that says, I know we did it to them. I know that they're like this. You know, you go through the poverty and all this different dysfunctional stuff going on. I think on some level there's a thought in the head like, yeah, we did this. Is there guilt? I don't think so. But I do think there's an awareness, a discomfort, and acknowledgement. And what better way to not have to acknowledge it than to get rid of the evidence? And so I do think it's, you know, it's just my thinking. I could be, you know, I may sound strange to somebody to say that, but I do believe that part of the reason that the attack is so vicious against black people here, in terms of just purging us out of the system, is that you're getting rid of evidence. You're able then to rewrite history, bring in new people, and ignore the history you have with them, because it didn't happen in the United States. So, because white people are talking energetically about the Native Americans, nobody wants to talk about what they did to us.
Appreciate
it. Do you
that.
Think that?
Hang on, because we had two other people that I want to make sure we get them in before Pam has to exit. I did want to say, First Lady Michelle Obama, she did bring up the enslavement of black people on Monday at her speech at the Democratic National Convention. She said every day when she wakes up in the White House that she is reminded that enslaved black people built the White House. And Bill O'Reilly of Fox commented today, this is in the New York Times, they wrote, addressing Michelle Obama's remarks about slaves having built the White House, Bill O'Reilly said Tuesday on his Fox News program that those slaves were, all in quotes, well-fed and had decent lodgings provided by the government.
Wow.
Anyway, and you can see that depicted in Roots, either version. The caller who dialed in, 2648, did you have a question for Pam?
Yes, I have a question. What do you think about black women being feminists?
Feminists? You know, I just don't really see black women as feminists. I do think that when black women are interacting with white women, they can be misled into thinking that they have some affinity with them. And I think that there is a small percentage of black women who do feel an affinity with white women. But from my experience, most black women don't have an affinity with white women. And in all the times I've been around black women, I on one hand a number of times I heard a black woman call herself a feminist. I never called myself a feminist. Even before I knew anything really about white supremacy, I never called myself a feminist, because I couldn't understand how I could align myself with a so-called feminist and white women were mistreating me too. So it never appealed to me personally. However, I do think sexism is very real, and I do think it's a real issue within the black community, absolutely. And I do think it's something that's largely ignored. And I think it's important that if you push for justice, you got to be for justice for everybody, or there's going to be justice for nobody. So anybody that thinks it's okay to mistreat or undermine or demean or look down on somebody because they're physically different, they have different genitalia, that person's not fighting for justice. That person is fighting for just me. So, no, I can count on one hand the number of times I've seen black women call themselves feminists. From what I can see, black women are just in a state of survival like everybody else, like black men. We're just in a state of survival. You know, most black women don't even make $50,000 a year, don't even make $40,000 a year. You know, you look at the typical job that black women have. They're just, you know. So I'm just saying that we got to be real careful not to feed into this divide and conquer thing that they, you know, they push, you know, making it appear that black men and women have some reason to have a beef with each other.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
Well,
I think our last caller, the caller at 6241, 6241, did you have a question for Pam?
Yeah, I have a question. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, good night to your guests. Good night to you, Pam. Thanks for being on the show. My question is specifically dealing with white women teachers on the job. I don't know if maybe this is a question I should say for workplace racism, but I'm dealing with a lot of that personally. So I just wanted to know if you have any strategies, you know, just in dealing with white women.
White women in terms of what? Could you give me an example of, like, what they might be doing, you know?
I have three white women supervisors.
Okay.
Currently. And you know, they're conspiring against me, you know, like they're doing mm-hmm. all kinds of things to change my schedule.
Mm-hmm.
One of them in particular, she doesn't I'm a classroom aide and teacher's aide. She doesn't really want me in the classroom, you know, because just because of my presence, you know, I guess. And because maybe she realizes that I'm not as confused as mm-hmm. most black people that she encounter. Mm-hmm. So she doesn't really like when I, let's say she would telling the children something or teaching them something about she's a social studies teacher about civil rights or Martin Luther King or pretty just dismissive about Malcolm X. She absolutely does not entertain talking about Malcolm X with the children, but I always do, of course, you know. And you know, she doesn't like that. You know, she doesn't like when I don't go along with her lesson plan. That would be the correct word. So and this was last year. So one of our colleagues, another white teacher, her friend, she got promoted to a supervisor position, kind of. And so they're, you know, they're all in cahoots now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Actively working against me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just wanted to know if you had any strategies or, you know, just dealing with them, you know? Like,
yeah,
yeah, they provided, the new supervisor, she sent out some personal information survey with, like, all kinds of questions of wanting to get to know you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she knew me for 2 years now. We've been working on the same job for 2 years, but now she's a supervisor. She's sending out a survey to get to know you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of personal questions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
one of the questions is, how do you act when you're angry? How do you react to things when you're angry? What is your biggest pet peeve? I mean, when I read the questions, like, I told her I don't feel comfortable answering all these questions. It seems like it's like a dating app. Like, you know, like I'm submitting for someone to get to know me, like, personally, like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, personal things, like, to get to know my profile or whatever.
Yeah,
whatever they're trying to do, you know?
Right,
psychological
right.
profile. They even had us do some enneagrams, personality quiz things to kind of...
Yeah.
See what personality type you are. It's like so ridiculous, you know. The terrorism, you know. Is, I mean, I'm ready to quit, you know.
Yeah.
I honestly am. I'm actively
seeking, you know, other employment right now, and it's kind of heartbreaking because, I mean, our school is like 99%, you know, black.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they just, you know, since last year, they've been doing a bunch of things that's, you know, could lead to me getting terminated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a rumor going around. I was hearing it that I cheated for a student. I cheated for a student on the test.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was his proctor. He has one-on-one testing, and I was his proctor for 3 benchmarks. And his grades increased. He was like one of the most disruptive students. You know, he had a real individualized schedule because he was very disruptive in the classroom, and the teachers kept kicking him out. You know, so I took on the task of working with him individually when this would happen. So his grades started to improve, and it improved on every benchmark. You know, and the white teacher that was supervising me.
Caller, I just wanted to hop in because Pam doesn't have full time to be with us till the end, just to give her a chance to respond. And certainly I more than empathize with the terrorism that you're experiencing on the job. And if you have the time, the interest, please dial in tomorrow. And folks, I'm sure, would appreciate if you want to share kind of what you're experiencing and give some of your thoughts and input for workplace racism tomorrow. But I did want to give Pam an opportunity to respond before she has to exit.
Yes. Please do, Pam. You pretty much have the scenario. So any strategies that you might have, I'll mute my line and I'll listen to your response. Thank you.
Okay. It's a very difficult situation, particularly when it comes to, you know, you're trying to maintain your job and maintain income, or you're working in a field that you want to be in. They do seem to have a instinctive, at least in my experience, an instinctive reaction to people who are less confused. I do think they can pick that up. I also think there's an attempt to keep black males out of the classroom. I don't think they like the idea of black males having influence in the lives of young black children, particularly young black males. And I think that's part of the problem. And they might see you as a bit of a threat to their authority to have total domain over these black children. The strategy, if you think improper things are being done, I would suggest documenting whatever you see that you feel is some kind of, when they're going against what they legally have the right to do. If they're doing things that you see as illegal, particularly any form of discrimination, harassment, stuff like that, I would document it. I think it is a good idea, unfortunately, to perhaps, you know, at the same time, you know, protect yourself by seeking other, you know, by looking at other employment. Do you have any suggestions, Gus?
I certainly, I would say number one, I know Mr. Fuller, he talks about it regularly, that in the system of racism, white supremacy, he does encourage that people try not to move too much from job to job, just because you're going to be leaving one batch of cahooting terrorist whites and going to another batch of cahooting terrorist whites, that you know, is the world that we live in under racism, white supremacy. So trying to develop codes that will work to try to neutralize what's happening. If you're able to dial in tomorrow to just try to process out exactly the things that they're doing to try to come up with specific strategies around that. You were talking about the questionnaire. Is that something that has to be done? I talk about this all the time in terms of policy and procedure. Do we have to fill this form out? Yes or no? And is this equal across the board? If everybody on this job who's employed here, do they have to fill out this form? If the answer is no, well, then, okay, no worry. I don't want to participate in this survey, and moving forward, there shouldn't be any repercussions or anything else going with that. I know we have done whole programs talking about black males specifically being kicked out of the classroom. We did one at the end of November with a black male, no less, where he had done extensive research on why this was happening and what was going on in the classroom to get rid of black male teachers. And we just invited a black female author on who has a new book. It just came out this year. It's called Teaching While Black,
which gives suggestions, tips for Black educators, male and female, that might be able to help them do a little bit better in the classroom. And she specifically uses the term white supremacy. So it seems like she came specifically with the idea of talking about dealing with racism, white supremacy. So you might want to check out that text as well. Anywho, did you have anything else you wanted to add, Pam?
Oh, no, I just think that's great suggestions. I think, for the caller to call in tomorrow and, hear some different strategies. And you're right, if you leave a job, I don't think they want Black men in the classroom. I don't think they want Black men having any influence over Black children. And that's why I think they've made it so, they've made such a concerted effort to get the Black men out of the home.
Absolutely. I know you have time constraints for the evening, so we definitely want to make sure we don't keep Pam too long. As listeners have said consistently, always a hoot having you on the program. Really enjoyed your views. I will encourage folks again, racismws.com, racismws.com. If you get any of the books, write a review. Go to amazon.com. As she said, you can copy and paste sentences or just two sentences. Shouldn't take that much time and energy. 5 minutes to write a review if you think it was constructive material. Anything you want to get in before you exit?
No, I just want to, thank the people that are listening. Thank you for calling in. And, get involved in something, particularly with your children in your home. We got to stop keeping white people's secrets. Think about what an advantage you would have had if you've understood the system of white supremacy when you were a child. And if you think that it's going to put your children in danger, think about how dangerous it's been for them already, the ones that didn't know anything about it. It didn't help them any. Matter of fact, it actually can increase the odds of danger because you don't have an understanding of the system. So, I just say get involved in something, participate in something, educate yourself, keep your war hats on.
Hear, 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 hear. Context of white supremacy. Once again, Pam, thoroughly enjoyed it. We will certainly look forward to having you back on the program as soon as possible. Keep up the outstanding work. I know folks appreciate the books that you've written and the blogging efforts, so keep up the outstanding work, and we will look forward to having you back on again soon. Stay as safe as possible, and we'll speak.
Okay, and thank you for having me.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Anytime, anytime. Context of white supremacy. Have a great evening, Pam.
Okay, you too. Mm-hmm. And to all the callers.
For
thanks.
Sure.
Good night.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Always grand to have Pam on with us. We'll hopefully have her back again. As I said, I knew she had time constraints where she couldn't be here till the very end, so I'm glad we were able to motor through and hit all of the calls. Without too much dallying, everybody. I think we were able to get everybody who dialed in who had a question for Pam. There were two people who were outstanding. They commented from the very beginning that they had comments, not questions. I wanted to make sure that they were able to step forward so they could get their comments in. I think it was two Black females specifically who dialed in and acknowledged that they just had comments. I think one of them was our Black female caller in New York. Are you with us, ma'am?
Yes, I am. May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I just had an observation that correlated with something that Pam was talking about with regard to HBCUs not being required and Black people not being required underneath the system. It just seemed that the neglect of HBCUs and the advancement of eugenics in the area of the world known as South Carolina are directly correlated. I just want to say at the outset that I love my HBCU. but last year, as many of us know, we discussed that. Was it mine about 2014? I think it was around the end of 2014.
I think it was last year because we were ahead of the curve before it got to Dylan Storm.
Okay.
We've done all those programs in South Carolina.
That's right.
That's right. It was last year. South Carolina State was on the verge of losing its accreditation and closing due to lack of state funding for the programs. And these same programs get massive amounts of money at white schools and colleges in South Carolina. However, after like court battles and many meetings, the state granted accreditation to South Carolina State University with the agreement to dismantle, restructure the board, cut jobs, and bring in a new president. Yet, I've recently found out that the state aggressively pumps monies into a community relations program entitled the South Carolina Campaign to Prevent Teen Pregnancy, and whose their mission is, I quote, to improve the health and economic well-being of individuals, communities, and communities in the state of South Carolina by preventing teen pregnancy. To achieve our mission, we work with a variety of programs, public, private, school, and community-based in all regions of the state. So this sounds like Planned Parenthood and every other means to kill black babies to me. And it essentially appears that while the state voted to save the accreditation of the HBCU, it also approved funding strategies to keep it open. But the balance was assuring that there are no black babies in the future to grow up to be educated, and reinforcing the closes of this particular HBCU. And probably these programs are rampant across the country, and have direct impacts on HBCUs. I'm quite sure, you know, white states statistics and numbers, like we talked about, way in advance when they're making these plans. So, ironically, I just wanted to say, of course, the person in charge of this organization is a black woman who, ironically, is a graduate of South Carolina State University. So I just wanted to make that comment, and thanks for taking my call.
I think Pam talked about that this evening, and we talked about that before. We've done programs on education, one of the areas of people activity, and how racist they can skillfully put a black person, put them where it looks like they are, quote unquote, in charge. And then all these bad things happen, and it's a black person who gets blamed for these type of things happening at these HBCUs. I think some of the programs we did last year, we were talking about how they were deliberately underfunding South Carolina State University and directing funds away from that that institution to white institutions in South Carolina. This is not a problem that is isolated just to that institution. This seems to be a widespread practice of doing away with these institutions. In fact, they've had a lot of reports talking about that specifically, even suggesting that these historically black colleges and universities are obsolete. We don't need them anymore, and they're having all these financial troubles. Lots of them. They've even done reports talking about how whites are now going there and saying, hey, we can get, you know, take advantage, and it's cheaper education and all this other stuff, just further displacing black scholars.
I just wanted to add one more thing with regards to what you just said. The tennis team at South Carolina State University is all white and is made up of people from other countries, from the United States. So you are very correct in that. They're coming, and they're taking what they can, and, you know, next thing you know, we see them in Wimbledon or what have you, but you'll never hear mentioned that they got an education at an HBCU. So I just wanted to say that.
Wow. That is the system of white supremacy. There was one other female caller who said she had a question who dialed in. Are you still with us? Or not a question, I'm sorry. She said she had a comment that she wanted to make sure she got in. Are you still with us, ma'am? It was a female. It was a lot of people that dialed in, so I do not remember the exact number, but I know it was another female caller. She said she just had a comment that she wanted to make. Are you still with us, ma'am, or did you tune out? Okay, looks like she might not be with us. If you are listening and you want to dial back in and get your comment on what you heard from Pam, if you want to dial back in and give that before we sign off, feel free. If there are other folks who have commentary, that's fine. I just wanted to make sure that I did get in. I just wanted to make sure that I got in really quick a couple things. the gun rhetoric, and that's the only thing I can label it, I think, in an accurate sense. When people talk about efforts that they think racist white supremacists are doing to disarm black people specifically, I just don't think that there's any evidence. To me, it just does not seem logical. Whites have way more guns, way more firepower than black people. I mean, it's not even close, the disparity in weapons. What they call the Obama effect, they went out and bought even more guns. And this was widely reported after the election of the first non-white president. And they've been doing so every time they have any of these shooting incidents. They said every time, spike in sales. Sandy Hook, back in 2012, spike in sales, going out to buy our guns. Every time that they throw out that herring that there's going to be gun control, they go out and buy more guns. So I just don't see any logic to that. I don't see any evidence right now, the people that submit that whites are trying to do something to change laws to make it so that black people are not able to defend themselves. I don't see black people with the ability to defend themselves now. If whites said, hey, we're going out, we're getting our guns, slingshots, arrows, machetes, and whatever other weaponry, drones, and, you know, we are going to take it to the black people, I don't see any evidence right now, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, that black people could have successfully defended themselves today, yesterday. I just don't see any evidence. To me, it's just not logical when I hear people say that. I've said this before when people say that they think they're putting in laws to disarm white people. I definitely do not think that that is true. I don't even know how you would do that, to go around and take all of the guns from white people. I haven't seen anything that looks like that. I just don't think any of that's accurate. I think a lot of that is just racist rhetoric that you'll hear from Alex Jones, suspected racist, where they will put this sort of rhetoric out there to get whites riled up. And what they do is buy even more guns and express their disgust and anger at President Obama or some other black person or whomever gets the target of the ire for that day. But I just don't think that there's any truth to either component of that in terms of taking guns from black people or taking guns from whites. Black people don't have nearly the firepower in comparison to whites. And I think Mr. Fuller emphasizes this all the time. We get our guns from them. I think whites are very aware of that. It's not like you have black people manufacturing firearms, bullets, repairing firearms, to my knowledge, anywhere in this part of the world. If I am in error, please let me know. Other folks who dialed in, who have comments that they wanted to make sure they get in before we wrap up, if you had anything to share, the brief time that we have left, you should do so now. I did want to make sure we got in. Workplace racism will be here tomorrow, as I told the male caller who's having the situation with the white females. We will be here tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Dial in. Looking forward to hearing exchange of views. If you have figured out some codification to minimize your problems on the job, definitely be the first one to dial in. If you are an entrepreneur, I say this all the time, if you're quote-unquote self-employed, definitely dial in and let us know how you are navigating racism, white supremacy, how it's impacting you, and particularly if you figured out some strategies that are helping you to minimize problems. One other quick thing I did want to say, because I did see some people even on my Facebook page going at Marilyn Mosby and criticizing her and saying she's useless and not worth this. I would say, number one, anybody who, you know, wants to call out another victim of racism and say that this person is useless in terms of how they have responded to any particular facet of white supremacy racism, I would like to know, how useful have you been in solving the problem of racism, white supremacy? Any aspect of it, if we're talking about Marilyn Mosby specifically, how useful have you been to see to it that no black person is ever a victim of police terrorism ever again? And if they are, you make sure that correct, just, punitive action is taken. How useful have you been in that effort? And if you can't stand up and outline, oh yeah, this is what I've done, this doesn't happen anywhere around me, anytime that I hear about this, it happens in my presence, someone lets me know, if I read about it in the newspaper, boom, I get cracking and I make sure it doesn't ever happen again. And if it does, you know you're going to have to answer to me. If you cannot say that, I don't want to hear any gripes about Marilyn Mosby, what she did, what she didn't do. She is a victim of racism, white supremacy. And I'll repeat what I said on my Facebook page. It's been my observation that victims of white supremacy, frequently our expectations are way out of alignment with the reality of white supremacy, racism. And I think a lot of that just goes back to what Mr. Fuller has on page one of his book. If you do not understand racism, white supremacy, everything else that you do understand will only confuse you. And I think Pam said on the program today that is something that we end up investing a lot of time in, as opposed to focusing on the problem. We squabble, bicker, blame other black people, victims of racism, and that is not worth a pecan. Did other folks have any comments they wanted to make sure they got in before we conclude things?
Yes. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to follow up on what you were stating about, I believe you were speaking about something about weapons on the behalf of non-white black people retaliating that way. One important aspect of any fighting force is supplies, and non-white black people don't have control of any supplies. If they decided to cut off our means to feed ourselves, there would be black people starving to death. An army also needs bullets. I don't know too many black gunsmiths. I imagine there's not a whole lot of them. So they can cut weapons being useful by not having any ammunition for that purpose. Fuel is also needed in the process, and I don't know of any black people who have control of gasoline, the production of gasoline, let alone talking about the transportation of it to place to place. Most of the non-white military forces I know of, if they were marginally successful, they had a white powerful group supplying them with those resources, such as the white people who call themselves Russians with Vietnam, is where they got a lot of their supplies on a continuous basis. So that's just something to think about. One thing that I think is relevant and would speak in a resounding way. Maximum compensatory justice in its accurate form does speak very loudly when carried out in its prescribed way. But the thought in mind of a large force at this point in time against white people, I don't think that's a reality based on what I stated before. Thank you.
Can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I did want to just clarify my point from earlier. Where I wasn't specifically calling out these two black males, Michael Jordan and President Obama, but I was just saying the power of the kind of, you know, their influential like status in the media and such, and also the fact that they're black. I think that they kind of crash the minds of a bunch of people, especially black people, when, you know, the way you think about like the victims of these police shootings in particular. And also the perpetrators or the alleged perpetrators as well. I mean, I find it kind of odd that that, you know, somebody, one person who engages, engages armed men, suspected race soldiers, and, you know, a bunch of them, can be called a quote unquote coward. But somebody who, a police officer or some other white person who admits they're afraid or, you know, alleges they're afraid when they shoot a black person, and they're never called a coward. And, you know, I think you got to think about, like, you know, connotation and denotation, and, you know, the connotation, like, of the word coward, like, that's, you know, probably one of the worst, you know, clean words you can be called in the English language. And the fact that nobody, that I think any of us, you know, nobody that any of us knows of, who's committed, you know, this act, you know, these acts of violence against black men have been labeled as cowards, I think is very telling. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify my point that wasn't meant as a gripe towards President Obama or Michael Jordan, just more of, you know, how, you know, language is used and how it can you know, influence people's decision making and in the way, you know, things are framed.
Oh, appreciate that. I didn't take it when you asked your question that was, you know, trying to disparage or put down Michael Jordan or President Obama for their comments. Yeah, I thought that was what you were trying to get at when you just, you know, elaborated a little further. But yeah, I appreciate the clarification. I didn't take it that way beforehand.
Yes, sir.
Other folks, oh, I see the New York Times, they just reported at least 66 enforcement officers have died in the line of duty so far in 2016, with 32 of the 66 were as a result of a shooting. 32 of the 66, and this is a national epidemic, it seems, from the writing of the article. I'll post it on Facebook if other folks would like to comment. I would love to see the number of black people that have died at the hands of enforcement officials, and including the number of black people who died in greater confinement from some sort of beating or hanging or whatever the case may be. I would love to see those numbers. I'm sure it's much, much higher than either the total 66 or the number 32, the number that have died as a result of a shooting. Other folks, anybody else that had commentary they wanted to make sure they got in?
Yeah,
hey, guys. Oh, you go ahead, brother.
Thank you. I just wanted to piggyback on what you were saying, Gus. I was recently researching how many black people were killed by police for a year, and I believe the number is at 135. Philando Castile made 135th black person to be killed by police for the year, according to what I read.
That's more than twice the number of enforcement officials that have been killed this year, and that's including like fatalities and, you know, other things, if they choked on a donut or whatever the case may be. That's more than twice. That's not even just limiting it to the enforcement officers who died as a result of a shooting. And I would even put another asterisk in there. Now, how many of these 32 that were the result of a firearm fatality, how many of them were shot by another white person? To even further clarify, since this all became a big to-do after what happened in Dallas and Baton Rouge, how much of this was white-on-white crime? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I'm aware of two such incidents you know, within a 100-mile radius of my house where you know, white assailants went and shot police officers. And in one case, I believe there was multiple of them. And it was not a peep from the national media about it. There was no, you know, no narrative of the, you know, quote unquote war on cops or, you know, Blue Lives Matter or any of that. Man, they didn't care.
Absolutely. I'm not surprised at all that That should be included. I think that should be brought up on a regular basis. Anyone when they want to get on that, you know, police lives matter and this is ridiculous and calling people cowards, to make sure that this is applied uniformly, because you'll get many more opportunities to label whites when they go out and attack enforcement officials and what have you, to label them as cowardly shooters and war on cops. That is just another facet of white on white crime. But yeah, so bring that up. You'll get many opportunities. I'm sure there'll be some other whites who go out and do that this year before 2016 concludes. Ross?
Oh, I'm sorry. You dropped out for a second. I didn't know if I was, what happened, so I'm sorry for interjecting. I was going to say, I just about a couple of things, but first about the whole coward thing. I think that it's very interesting that they will call them cowards, because these are people who filmed themselves prior to doing what they did, supposedly, and they understood that they were walking into a situation they would not, you know, walk out of. And they went against people armed with guns that basically their entire history is organized terrorism, but yet they're cowards. And I just believe that is another form of reverse psychology, so that no one else thinks of any sort of violent retaliation for what has been done to us as a viable option. I think that that's really one of the psychological plays on this, just logically speaking, in the system of white supremacy, that would be a logical play for them to do. Now, I liked her comments when Pam spoke about Donald Trump, when I discussed the fact that I really feel like, you know, Obama was kind of the setup so that, you know, he would be the new Ben Tillman that they're going to reconstruct white supremacy under. And it seems to be going in that direction, even with how everything's going with the Democrats and how it looks like everything's falling apart in the Democratic Party. I think it just bolsters his ability to get in even more. And did you get to see the clip that I sent you in the email about the author that wrote for Donald Trump actually coming out and calling him a sociopath?
I did see that.
Okay, I found that very telling when he discussed the fact that Donald Trump could not even hold his attention long enough to even write the book. He had to write the book in spurts, and his narcissism, and just how, like, just when he describes who he was, and when he discussed specifically the fact that he said he felt that there was any sort of major event in his country, like, I guess, similar to a 9/11. He doesn't know how Donald Trump would even be able to respond to that with such a short attention span. And I'm just thinking, like, he seems like just the right person to resurrect the system of white supremacy in a way that's unprecedented. And, I mean, I've never seen a more overtly racist candidate make such incredible strides towards the White House ever. And that's why I believe that Obama was the setup when she said that he was put in office to make white people angry. I totally believe that, because they're so angry at him, now they're going to go to Ben Tillman in the form of Donald Trump to resurrect white supremacy. And I think it's going to probably be such an overt expression of violence towards black people that is something that we haven't seen probably since the 60s. That's what I'm predicting is going to come as things develop and as he takes office.
Something to behold, for sure. Something to behold. Did we miss anybody? Anybody else? Last few minutes here before we get ready to wrap up. Anybody else who had commentary they wanted to make sure they got in before we are all done?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to encourage the caller that was talking about his school situation to call in tomorrow, and pretty much every Thursday. Sounds like a pretty dangerous situation that he's in. If they're like accusing him of things and whatnot, so I would really like to encourage, well, everybody that listens, but especially that person to call in. And I started calling in once it became like just on Thursdays, the workplace racism, and it's been really helpful. So hopefully you can call in tomorrow and get some really good advice.
Appreciate that. For sure. I know on the cheating thing, because I think that was one of the allegations where they said that, you know, you might have helped a student cheat during an exam, or because you were proctoring the student or what have you, were kind of there to supervise or aid or what have you. With that, I would definitely, that's where I say the documentation. I don't know if they have video footage or what have you in your facility, but I would want evidence. We talk about that on a regular basis as well. If you are being formally accused of something, where is the evidence that I, you know, participated in some sort of malfeasance or helping this student cheat during the exam? Where exactly is the evidence? Let's go through the formal procedure of, you know, whatever I'm being accused of, because this is right. I mean, that in and of itself, just that right there, I think is really important, because Black people on the jobs, wherever it happens to be, whether you're a teacher or a janitor even, are being accused of misconduct all the time. So all of us should have a really solid code on what to do if you are accused on the job, the best way to handle it. Again, I'm all for, hey, let's manage our emotions. We shouldn't be surprised about this, because they do this all the time. Even President Obama, former Attorney General Eric Holder, they do this all the time. If you're a Black person, you're accused of some sort of misdoings. So just being calm, asking for evidence, and what is the procedure? Are we supposed to have due process on the job? If I have been accused of something, let's go through the due process and let's see if the evidence shows that I did something wrong. And I think just if you can follow that procedure in a calm manner, if you did not do anything, and most of the time we have not, I think many of the times you can walk through just asking questions, being calm, and asking that they provide evidence that you can get them to back down. Because I think a lot of times in these situations, they want us to get emotional, chimp out, as they say. And then that makes it much easier for them to just say, oh, well, you're flying off the handle and being emotional about all this. And, you know, then you might do something else, or we make another error, or we just fly off the handle and leave the job voluntarily. If you can kind of neutralize a lot of those responses where you're not being emotional about it, I think that can go a long way to being able to successfully neutralize thwart their effort if they're making some sort of ungrounded allegation against you to stop that process, so that you can at least, you know, stop that and then on to the next act of racism that you're going to have to deal with. I would check out that book, too, written by a Black female, Teaching While Black. It just came out this year. It's a Black female author. I just invited her on the program yesterday, and she uses the term white supremacy in the book. Seems like she's being very direct about things, and she does have suggestions. I think we had some Black educators who read the book, who checked it out, who also thought it would be great. Thought she had some great information in the book. So check that out if you can. Teaching While Black. I can give you the author's name in a second as well.
Gus, I was going to say, due to the acute nature of his situation, I think it would also be helpful, too, if he can get in touch with Neely Fuller. I think maybe he might be able to also help give him some pointers, as maybe as far as how to navigate that scenario. Just with that clip you played previously that we discussed, I think he might be able to really give him some insight. I don't know if that was something that you might have thought about.
Oh, for sure. For sure. He always has great insight. I know he always is willing to share a bit of his time. If you have a workplace racism problems in general, but certainly things on the job, you can give him a jingle, 202-484-5461, 202-484-5461. And you can discuss it with Mr. Fuller, see if he has some tips, suggestions to offer. And the author of the book Teaching While Black is Pamela Lewis, Black female, Pamela Lewis. She has a Twitter account as well. Tweeting Teacher is her Twitter account. Anybody else have any quick comment they needed to get in before we sign out? Anybody, anything else they wanted to make sure they got in? Grant. We will be here tomorrow. Workplace racism, as just advertised, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll be looking forward to hearing from folks tomorrow. And again, if you, it's not just if you have problems, certainly if you're having difficulties, dial in, share. Hopefully we'll have some a suggestion or two. But if you have figured out some things to neutralize racist efforts on the job, keep down some of those difficulties, you should be one of the first people to dial in. This is the situation. This is what I did. This is what I said. Or this is the bit of policy procedure that I used. This is what I did, and it worked. Worked great. I've used it more than once. It's worked every time. That's the sort of thing that we need if you have figured out something that is helping you to minimize difficulties on the job. But either way, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, we will be here. As I said at the beginning, for all the folks enthused about the Purge franchise, we'll be here a week from today. Dr. Martin Kevorkian, it has been a few years since we've had him on the program, but he is one of the very first guests that we had on the Cows, admitted white supremacist, Dr. Martin Kevorkian, author of Color Monitors. And when I say like very first guests, he was like one of our first 20 programs that we did. He was here. He's been back many times. We've discussed just a litany of films over the years. I can't even remember them all. Pulp Fiction, Hancock, Rocky, tons of them. And as a admitted white supremacist, he has a very keen grasp of what is happening in a lot of these films. We did Nothing But a Man. We did some older ones as well. But we should have him here to discuss the Purge franchise, all three of the films, including the latest installment that just came out a few weeks ago, the July 4th weekend. We'll be talking about that if you need the link. I hate it because it's just people end up bothering me for links, and then I have to send out like 20,000 emails of links so people can see this film. But if you want to check out the third one and not go to the theater to spend any money, I think I can shoot you a link to view it if you want to prepare for next Wednesday, August 3rd, when he'll be here. But I do think it's important, just the situation in Indiana where there's a murdering white teen, and the ramifications are enormous. We'll be looking forward to that next Thursday. And I will say, even though reading is much more important than watching television, you can read some of Pam's material, Dr. Welsing, lots of folks, Mr. Fuller's updated code book, which is out now. Lots of reading material available. Teaching Wild Black, Pamela Lewis. But I am going to check out the Jason Bourne flick that is coming out this week. Reason being, I'd seen this film like years ago, and for whatever reason, it just popped into my mind about what does it mean to be white. I ask that on the program all the time. So that's one of the most important questions in terms of figuring that out. And just this whole series, this white man who's a white killer, no less, white killer who forgets, he gets amnesia, forgets who he is. This whole film is about a white person who goes out to a white killer. That's the way it should be stated. A white killer who goes to kill a black person who I believe is a quote unquote president, leader of a nation. But I mean, blatant white supremacy in the film. He's going to kill this black guy, and not just kill him. He's going to kill this black guy and do it in a manner so that it can be blamed on other black people. So he's going to kill this black guy. And when he goes to do it, the black male is holding his child. And so this white killer gets stunning, has a moment of empathy like, oh, man, I can't murder this nigger holding his little nigger child. Oh, I can't do it. And so he turns around and he gets amnesia, loses his identity. That, in my view, that's the whole reason why I said, wow, they are really telling a lot about what it means to be a member of the white race just with this film right here. And that's the whole series. He loses his total identity. His complete membership in the white race, his complete white identity is lost at the moment that he is unable to kill a nigger. That's my reading of it. I'm not devoting a whole lot of time right now. If you want to, you know, chat about it, if you've seen it, you have a view, you can think about it, email, write about it, whatever, down the road. But I am going to check out the latest installment just to see if that holds through the film. They do keep making a lot of these films for whatever reason, but that's my analysis. You can watch the first one. And I think even one of them is called The Bourne Supremacy. But you can go and check out the first one and see if that holds true. That's what, in my view, what does it mean to be white? That's what it means. You're supposed to kill black people at any time, any place. Not being able, willing to do that, now you have a problem with your white identity, your white membership, if you have a problem with the abuse, terrorism, murder of black people, anytime, any place, male, female, child, whatever. Anyway, we'll be back tomorrow. Workplace Racism, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. If you have questions, Can't find something in the archives, guest suggestions, gripes? Drop us an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. Invest if you think the program is constructive, racism-notes.blogspot.com, racism-notes.blogspot.com. PayPal is in the top right corner. If you're not in the PayPal, drop us an email. We'll get you a physical mailing address. Thanks to all the folks for tuning in. Thanks again to Pam for sharing a bit of her Wednesday evening with us. Visit her website again, racismws.com. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. You do not want to lax in your codification with the war that is being waged against the black people, in particular non-white people on the whole. Certainly if you're going to be in a vehicle as a driver, passenger, even as a pedestrian, you do not want to be intoxicated. You do not want to make the job of Daniel Pantaleo, Darren Wilson, Daniel Holzclaw any easier. Buckle up every time you're in an automobile. Again, let's minimize contact with race soldiers. Let's make sure we're putting ourselves in position to make phenomenal decisions at all time to keep ourselves as safe as possible. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cows signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.